Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Anti-racist conference of all time, we have a surprising guest that would like to make a statement to us about his struggle to come to terms with tolerance and diversity.
I need you all chasing rabbits, and you know you're going to fall.
Open up your eyes, then you realize they want genocide.
This is Kyle Hunt. Thank you so much for joining me here this Monday evening. It is December 2nd, 2013. I hope you get a chance to go over to renegadebroadcasting.com and check out the archives of all our great hosts here. There have been some fantastic material coming out, so do take a listen. Tonight, I have a returning guest. This is the third show with Horace the Avenger from WhiteRabbitRadio.net. A lot has happened since Horace and I last spoke in October, so much to get into tonight, and I know a lot of people have some questions they'd like to ask you, so we're going to be trying to get as much of it in as possible. Horace, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on again.
You're quite welcome. As I said, there's been a lot happening in just the short period of time since we spoke last. Somewhat recently, you released How Whites Took Over America Part 2, TPs and Refugees. Any comment upon the reception it's gotten and also what you're doing to fund your next video adventure?
Well, what we're doing is getting ready to ramp up production. So this is our first production quality piece, meaning that we can we're working with different animators around the world that I've went out and secured, basically, that we can potentially work with capable mass production pieces, meaning a series or something along those lines. It's an important piece because there's a saying I always use in propaganda: when the ducks quack, you have to feed them. One of the challenges with our first piece is its length. Although the content is great, its length. And its length means that a lot of people skip certain parts, and that's not what we want. We want people to absorb everything.
It's pretty sad that a video that's you know, just over 10 minutes long, you know, is a little bit too long in these YouTube days.
Well,
it's true, though.
You know, I remember Bob Whitaker said something, it must have been a decade and a half ago, that book sales were dying. They were going to continue to die. And he talked about certain famous publishers that only a handful of people really make a lot of money on books. Most people don't. And that he was going to all blog in all short formats. And if you ever read Whitaker's writings, it's very short.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what he's going with. So that is tend to be a trend across the board that isn't letting up. With that being said, we had to revisit some stuff either in a new series or in an old series. And the older series is much easier because the white and Indian dynamic is so well ingrained in every white from the propaganda standpoint. It's something we already had concept art done because we had one out there.
Mm-hmm.
Which means its production cost was a lot lower than just coming up with something from scratch. Also, I wanted to we really had to sit down and look at what percentage of the audience was watching things and what they were watching. And so far, about 70% are watching the whole thing through, which is pretty good. It's pretty extraordinary of the latest one, which is what we want to see. And the parties that want something like this out there are very happy with it.
Well,
it's anti-racist Hitler is a sledgehammer, and you know, we tend to like that type of sledgehammer. That's what I tend to write. This one starts out, and Bob said the first minute and a half seemed like something put out by the National Review. He thought he was insulting me. He actually wasn't. That was the whole goal. And then, of course, after the feast, we start flipping the script. You see the second 2 minutes, the last 2 minutes are going to be classic stuff that if you were to see it anywhere, you know that someone affiliated with Bugs or White Rabbit Radio probably wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
The classic style. But we have to have this type of thing out there.
So this came out during the Thanksgiving Day holiday, so it's obviously hitting it at the right time, but also...
No, actually, putting out stuff in the holidays is pretty dangerous.
Well, okay, but I just meant thematically it fits in.
Sure.
I understand your point. People are going to be away from their homes, their computers, where they'd be checking things more frequently. They're spending time with their family and everything like that. But also, this idea that the Indians have been so unfairly repressed and oppressed, and that even to this day they're just being dishonored because of the Washington Redskins, and they need to change their name. This whole agenda has really ramped up in this past year and even just these past few months. So you're playing with that idea, and admittedly, I've heard you say that you're not necessarily taking the factual approach in dealing with this material, and you're kind of playing into the common conceptions as to what actually happened when Europeans went over to America.
One of the last emails I read was some liberal accusing me of saying liberal policies genocided the Indians. So he obviously, liberal policies basically are genocide.
Yes.
So I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, there's another thing here, too. I always get asked questions. You know, this is basically white genocide in crayon for dummies is what it is. That's what I was asked to do. Something to step back under 6 minutes. It's 5 minutes long. It's something anyone can watch. The first couple minutes are pretty slow. for pro whites, it would be. I told Bob to skip the first 2 minutes. The second part is definitely going to be something typical to something I would write, but maybe not as harsh, maybe not as brutal. Like when the whites are saying, you know, when the Indian chief, the trader chief, as he's called, says, you know, when whites moved in, the Chief Strong Winds, I'm sorry, was asking why. How did this happen so quickly? And the trader chief said, when the whites moved in, we called an election. The whites voted themselves into power. There's a transition that usually happens from the emails to the audience at that point in time. The average white viewer is not ready for that line, and they're not ready for what comes after that. So that's the kind of classic script writing that you're always going to see from yours truly. With that being said, we had to step back and really do one for crayon, in crayon for dummies, under 6 minutes to get the kind of playtime we want long-term for anti-racist Hitler and stuff like that.
Well, it's a great idea because you're flipping the script and just showing how if this was done to any other people, it would be obviously considered genocide. But when it's whites, it doesn't count. And whites, of course, have never been indigenous anywhere, right? They're not considered the indigenous of Europe.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt your brilliant comment there.
This is
one of the main things that I get asked all the time from average whites. Why aren't they allowed to vote on immigration and stuff like that? And my answer, of course, the typical pro-white answer is usually a long answer about the Jews that is usually factually correct. However, that's not the argument they use. The argument is not just, well, we're Jews, you can't vote. That's not the argument. The argument is something very Talmudic. It's a circular argument. And you see this come out in the animation because I get so tired of answering it. I'm just going to throw them an animation in 5 minutes to tell them how it goes, you know. And basically the argument is you can't vote on immigration because human rights are not subject to a vote. Well, then why do they get a vote? Well, because denying them the vote would be a denial of their human rights. We can't deny their, you know, we can't violate their human rights. By denying them the political process, we're violating their human rights. So it's a circular argument where we have no human rights. It's kind of like all whites are racist and only whites are racist. And that's kind of in mantra-style thinking or open system-style thinking. We look to crush that type of closed system thinking or what you might call Jew think or Talmudic think, the circular arguments that they always make. Most pro-whites don't even know that's their argument. You know, you can't vote on immigration because human rights aren't subject to a vote. Wait a minute, how come they get all this vote? Well, because not giving them a vote would deny their human rights. Wait, just a minute.
Right. And
that is the argument.
The thing that's happening is that this is being
And it's
applied.
Not an argument, obviously. It's a genocidal scam.
Right. And this is being applied universally in white countries
and only white countries.
This is what they're using as a justification. They're refugees. We need to take care of their human rights. Oh, we can't let them come into this country illegally and then live poorly. That would be a denial of their human rights. So let's give them laptops, houses. Let's give them health care, daycare, whatever it takes. We can't let them have their human rights denied while of course, the indigenous people of these countries are having very few children and very poor.
Right. There you go. I mean, it is something that I actually get tired of answering, but that, you know, it's kind of our job. And so I think pieces like this are great. You know, what we're in the process of doing is taking a sledgehammer and tearing down a structure, and then, of course, at the same time building a structure. And sometimes it's a move between one extreme or the other, tearing out walls and building something at the same time. But the average, you know, a lot of times you get these. I get comments from some very respected people that, you know, anti-racist Hitler caused trauma in their friends, and they thought it was rather funny, but they wanted something to kind of anesthetize an audience to move them into our type of thinking. And so you get these transition, a very simple little transition. And, you know, where anti-racist Hitler might be a sledgehammer, this is more like a little nightstick, a police nightstick that you would tap someone with or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is really what we need. And people are ready for it out there. I think they are because they see the results of these insane immigration policies and they already see their communities being flooded with, oftentimes the criminal elements of the non-white races who come in, and they don't like it. So when they hear, President Obama and his wife going to some conference of illegal immigrants who I guess were having a hunger strike or whatever, they get a little fed up. Wait, why are you guaranteeing them this and that? we're all pretty hungry, jobless in this country. You're ensuring that, that millions and millions and tens of millions more people are going to be coming into the United States. This is insane. And actually, if you look at the immigration policies they're putting forward, the numbers are astronomical. There's no way we could ever possibly support this. So more and more people are getting really frustrated that on both sides of the aisle, immigration discussions are pretty much off the table.
Yeah, they're off the table because, well, people aren't allowed to vote on immigration, period. What they're realizing that you're not allowed to vote on immigration. What you're allowed to vote on is how many illegal immigrants actually become citizens and win,
right?
Which is actually kind of ridiculous. They're not voting on immigration. And in California, when that did happen, they threw it out the window. Why? Because human rights aren't subject to a vote. That's a UN rule. It's only a rule applied to white countries. So it's like borders. Borders, Japan has a border. Nigeria has a border. All these countries have borders. Taiwan has a border. Mexico actually has a border. We don't. we're white. We don't have borders. So there's all this weird stuff applied to us, all these double standards, and we've got to keep taking them down one by one and pointing them out. Pointing them out basically does a great deal of harm because they're silly.
Right.
They're silly, and it's a genocidal scam. Most people watching this is going to include, this diversity stuff is just a genocidal scam, And part of the broader goal for White Rabbit Radio is basically at a local level, when the average white kid is walking down the street a decade from now and they hear the word anyone white, anywhere in the white world hears the word hate, neo-Nazi, white supremacist, multiculturalism, diversity, all these words are going to be associated with code words that anti-whites use. They're just going to automatically, I want them automatically to psychologically realize this is a code word used by enemies. And that,
right,
of course, gives anyone pro-white on the street a great deal of moral authority.
Well, actually, I don't know if you saw this, but apparently anti-racist is no longer a code word for anti-white. I saw it on a billboard. Anti-racist is now a code word for love.
Yeah, they
defaced the sign, of course.
Yeah, they vandalize that. It'll be redone, though. They'll vandalize stuff. They get upset, These things happen. I just saw another sign I'm getting ready to put up on the website over in New Zealand. Anti-race is a code word for anti-white. Someone put up on a freeway. A big sign. Big sign. So.
Yeah, well, I've seen more and more of this. This happened. Actually, there were some signs that I saw a video of that were on overpasses, Africa for the Africans, and then the next overpass you see, Asia for the Asians, and then finally, white countries for everyone. This was put up November 18th, which is my birthday, so I thought that was a great birthday present to see all this type of propaganda getting out there in the real world of people driving around, no matter how much I hate that being the real world, but we need to get them where they can see this message and move it out of the out of kind of some of the echo chambers of the internet.
That happens. I always get in these arguments with certain people that the internet is not the real world, and which I think is kind of absurd. It's like saying the TV is not the real world. Unfortunately, life a lot of times imitates art. Before you hear or see something on TV historically, on the street, you're going to hear or see it on TV. It's kind of,
right.
And the internet now plays that role, and a lot of elites are upset over that. They're not upset over that things from TV make it on the street, but they are upset over certain things from the internet make it to the street because they can't control the message many times. With that being said, we have to understand that the tail does wag the dog. Before I heard rap blaring out in my neighborhood, they were hearing it. Someone was hearing it on TV, or I heard it on TV. That's just the way things work. That's how things work. And so don't think in terms of the internet is a tremendous amount of power if you're willing to use it for a message. We have an interesting position. It doesn't matter whether it's putting out videos, and I'm talking about all pro-whites. When it comes down to like YouTube videos, the average YouTube video doesn't get 53% of all YouTube videos don't even get 500 views. Mm-hmm. Most pro-white videos just blow that out of the water. The top 2% get maybe 100, or top 1%, 1.5% get 100,000 plus, and then maybe a top 1/3 of 1% get over 1 million. And so in that particular case, that's why many parties are very upset with pro-whites on YouTube and pro-whites on various different video channels, and that's specifically why White Rabbit Radio TV is so hated and other things like that. Look at the numbers.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that what you have going on is an echo chamber. Perhaps what I was talking about was more of some of the discussions that are had in chat rooms and everything. You focus a great deal on the practical politics, getting the message out there in the real world of the internet. As you said, it is very real. Because this is affecting many, many people's minds, and this is where they're getting their primary information these days. But that it's just so important to take our ideas, these messages, in simplified form, and
there
put
them
out there.
There has been criticism. Well, there has been criticism maybe about a year ago coming from certain elements in Europe, in the UK. Well, okay, you dominate on the internet, but you know you're not dominant on the street. But America doesn't really have the street and the street activism of the nationalist structure of Europe. And what I told them, though, because we're dominating on the internet, you're going to see us dominate the street. You know, if you're dominating TV, you're going to dominate the street. If you're dominating the internet, you're going to dominate the street. Just give it a time. And then, of course, signs start popping up everywhere that I have nothing to do with, and all of a sudden, you know, they quiet down. The tail wags the dog when it comes to propaganda. It always has. It always will.
Mm-hmm. And I think that really we're contending with just such a massive geographical area in America that it's a little bit harder to get people together in large numbers and be effective on the streets as compared to when they do it in Europe in certain places.
Sure, because you're dealing with smaller areas. There are some differences. But at the same time, what we're seeing in America, what we're seeing in various different places is just that, is that people are taking matters in their own hands and saying, you know, I can do this. This is duplicatable.
Mm-hmm.
I can put up a sign. I can put up a billboard. And that becomes infectious.
Oh, yeah, definitely. People want to feel like they're taking part. And some people out there do have money to support these causes and are willing to fund things like billboards if they think it's going to be effective and it's going to have a lasting result. Because they care. They care about the future for their country, for not just their country, for their kin, for their people, for their nation. So I hope more and more people just decide to take the initiative and run with it. They don't need to get any kind of okay from any particular group. People out there need to get more independent-minded in terms of how can I make this happen with just myself or a few people working around me, rather than, you know, I need to be part of an organization, an official organization, to be really active.
The person that started that big shitstorm in Arkansas has nothing to do with any organization anywhere. They're just someone that decided to put up a sign. You know, that anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. You know, once a message is out, messages are used a variety of different ways. They create a great deal of pressure, in this type of system.
Well, there's now real pressure that's being put on people who are pushing for this genocidal agenda of unlimited illegal immigration into this country. For example, I don't know how much of this is real opposition, but Mark Zuckerberg, owner of Facebook, was hosting a hackathon with illegal aliens, and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, actually sent him a letter, which he ignored, or sent him a few letters saying, "We'd like to talk to you about the facts of who's going to be made into citizens here, how this is a very dangerous policy." So it seems that within the government, people who are tasked with actually doing their jobs and who aren't able to do them are getting kind of frustrated at their lack of support for doing their jobs from the politicians. And I think that more and more police and military and other people who are officially part of the government are going to see that this government is not serving us whatsoever, and that their policies actually are genocidal in many different ways.
Yeah. Yep. That's definitely happening more and more. They become disenchanted with the system itself. So
let's talk about how people are becoming a bit more disenchanted with the liberal notion of blacks or black youths in particular just being these perfect people who are just so oppressed and couldn't possibly do any harm. Well, we're seeing more and more reports of this knockout game, as it's called. I don't consider it a game. I consider it murder or attempted murder.
We've been watching, you know, if you're pro-white, you've been seeing, this actually goes back, I think, a few years. The mistake they made is they decided to make it a knockout the Jew game. Then it gets on all the news channels. That's what happened. They started attacking the Jews. But, yeah, and certain parties are going to use that as an excuse to really run it now.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, that we've got this being put out there that blacks are dangerous? They could potentially come up and just clock you in the side of the head, as they can and do and have been doing for some time, or robbing you in the old classical way. But now that this is tied into persecution of Jews, I don't know. It makes me a little bit concerned when I see the media reporting on this game in the way that they are. And it's actually caused, it seems, a number of copycat events. This has put the idea into a lot of kids' minds, a lot of youth's minds, perhaps.
Yeah, I think there's a certain part of the English-speaking world elite in America that wants to drive the drumbeat of violence or wants a lot of internal conflict. They always have. They stoke the flames. They divide the social space and continue stoking the flames. They think by creating a lot of little wars, you can rule indefinitely, and it's quite a bit flawed. What it is dehumanizing to blacks. Violence is always dehumanizing to people. So if you want to see yourself, you know, if you're seen doing that on TV over and over again, it's dehumanizing, and of course it scares people. It scares people, and you know, it's just not good for blacks. I don't know how it's, you know, it's not anything different than we've seen over the decades. What you're seeing is a broad, you know, we're seeing news reports that I would think come off of America Renaissance. The only place you could see them, something like that, would be American Renaissance online, Amren, you know, 1996 or something like that, or some type of white nationalist website of the sort. We're just seeing a lot of people recognize black crime and the crime statistics.
It's so interesting that this follows on the heels of Trayvon being turned into a saint.
Yeah, well, there's more than, yeah. Well, the elite always like swinging from one extreme to the other. There is a great deal of concern that they're going to lose control of the message. And so talking about black crime is one easy way for them to try to contain certain things. And that's why you're seeing O'Reilly and whatnot talk about it.
To corral whites back in to the mainstream.
That's correct. They're
very
concerned about losing control of the message. This type of society we live in, the type of society all whites, I don't care if you're listening to this broadcast, broadcast somehow 10,000 years from now, whites only build open societies. We build societies all based on a lot of mutual respect, cooperation, and a lot of it's about message control and great communication, and that can be used for us and against us. And they obviously like using that against us, but there is there's two edges of that sword. You can lose control of it, and I don't care if you're a dictator. You lose control of the message, you lose everything, period. You just put a clock on your head. You cannot govern or rule or do anything else unless you can control the message and perceptions. And the internet and various other different things have just worked against them one after the other.
I think that is what seems to have happened here. You've hit the nail on the head. It wasn't so much that perhaps they wanted to take this swing from blacks being the eternal victim of hated white oppressors or hateful white oppressors, as they were trying to somehow say in the Zimmerman-Trayvon debacle there. The reason that they made this change is because a lot of white people, because of that case, started looking into this whole racial violence issue.
Yeah,
said, wait,
they don't, and they don't own the net.
Right.
The CNN does not own the net when it comes to racial violence statistics. CNN does not own the discussion. Fox News will not own the discussion. We own that discussion. You're on to something right there. That is the general challenge. How do you contain the message how do you control the message when you don't own control the internet? You can't. It's basically truth is ultimately going to come out. And, of course, to do that, what you'll see on Fox News, what I said at the Stormfront conference is that, you know, Bill O'Reilly on a few nights there actually sounded, I forget what it was over, but he actually sounded like he was giving a speech at some white nationalist conference on black on white crime. It was, you know, they're moving that way. And then, of course, he has on the token so-called conservative black, basically, black guy or gal, to talk about how it's culture, it's culture, it's culture, and it's culture of violence and culture of rap. And race, or culture is race gone to seed. But anyways, that's what we're seeing. And what we say is moving right along. You once you start down that particular road toward the truth, you're on a slippery slope to our position, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, they're just acting as gatekeepers for
people
to
find us. Well, that's their job. Their job is basically to run interference. The problem is they've done it so well, they basically isolated the whole entire. None of them can talk about race. No one can talk about race.
Yeah, well, you know what?
We own that. That's our domain. They can't go down that particular road because they're immediately in our camp. So they're just kind of tiptoeing in this direction, that direction. And there's a lot of nefarious elements also at the top of the at the top of Western civilization. God knows what they're really up to.
Yeah.
And you never know how many are on our side and how many aren't. They're there. You know, but you don't really know anything until the right pieces are out there for them to start really grabbing hold of it. A consistent message is one thing. It's kind of like the global warming is a hoax. You never know who's going to hammer that until that message is out there. Once it's out there, anything can happen. Anything can happen to hurt the global warming camp, and that's what did happen.
Yeah, so I see that the global power system that has been set up against us, well, it is starting to fall to pieces. This is exactly what you've been talking about with your metaphor of shattering glass just using an opera singer's voice, if you hit the right frequency. So I think that this is a perfect metaphor, but it's what's happening. I don't know if you've been following all the different nationalist marches and rallies that have been taking place all over Europe and the white world in general. Recently in Poland, in Stockholm, in Latvia, all over, to be honest. I've been seeing these videos come in, massive amounts of people, torch rallies. It's incredible. And, of course, corresponding right along with this, the Jews are complaining about a rise in anti-Semitism in Europe and, of course, in America.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's the old bankster trick is, you know, get in trouble, put in a left loser like Obama, make it a big failure and bring the right to power. The problem is that the last time they did that, they got a little out of hand. Adolf Hitler got a little out of hand when he threw out the bankers and he went with that Reichsbank and stuff like that. So they're a little loopy about that. And plus, you know, when it comes to the Jews, they can never really – they don't want to go down that road ever again. They're kind of conditioned. They've conditioned themselves to such an extent that you know, a lot of young Jews walking down the street are facing a lot of conflict. You know, many of them are reading our material and stuff like that. That's just the way it works. The way it works. When you make a final move on an enemy, when you make a final move and reveal yourself, you have the chief of the Cherokee Indians, since we'll go back in the Indians, and one morning he steps up and decides to create a blended humanity in only Cherokee territory. Sooner or later, he's going to get one, a spear into his head, or a total revolt. You're not going to be able to maintain that, and there ain't no going back.
Yeah.
Once the Indians figure out what he's up to, they just want to know why. You know?
It's crossing the Rubicon, and feel like
apparently he's not a Cherokee. He's a pink rabbit chief. He's been in disguise the whole time waiting to make his move, you know. Mm. I don't know how to explain it, but that would be a simple explanation. But that is occurring on the subconscious level of white rabbits all over the planet.
Well,
these elites are basically traitors, that they have no interest in us at all, and you know.
Well, they've outed themselves. They've said there's no turning back. We have crossed the Rubicon. You know, sure, they still put out their kind of facade to the general populations, but they make no bones about what they're actually up to, and it's all out there documented. You know, as Alex Jones said, you know, I've got the papers, I've got the quotes. You know, they're out there in the open. They've made their move, and they're putting in what they see as their final solution. But I think they've overstepped it. I think they've either they did it too late, or they did it too early, or they've gone just overboard in how much of
something's
their anti-white
went wrong in their game plan. Their game plan was always out to 2020. Their big number was always 2050. If you look at their statistics, they always create the inevitable future for us. And you know, this inevitable future never really arrives, but it's something they shoot for. And they got the inevitable future, you know, no more white countries, no more white this and that. But their statistics are way out, and they're in trouble right now. They've been in trouble for quite some time, but now, of course, you know, there's a marker on the date in my mind, and that's September 11, 2001. And since then, they've been going crazy across the planet, and they've been, you know, homeland defense, and you've got all this stuff ramping up for whatever it is they're ramping up for. They're running scared. There's a lot of infighting. More infighting is at the top than any time, maybe in hundreds of years. I mean, these guys are in total war, some of these different camps. So, you know, they got big problems, and we look to add to it with a message.
Horst, do you mind commenting upon geopolitics in general right now? Just a few words on some of the power plays that you see being made. You get into this at Endgame Exotica, which people can subscribe to over at whiterabbitradio.net. You talk about China, Russia, Iran, and other global powers that are either rising in importance, no longer the concern of the United States, or whatever the case may be.
Well, the one to always watch is Russia and Putin, because he's just a cage guy. I mean, this is a geopolitical. I forget, his internal policies are all across the board, and by and large, there's a lot of anti-white stuff there, no doubt about it. But geopolitically speaking, he's a nationalist, and he's the first European country, white, Christian country, to assert brutal nationalist foreign policy across the board, and to do so with blinding success against the so-called Western world, which is really just the English-speaking elite, Jew and Gentile, like Washington, Tel Aviv, New York, and, of course, London. And he has done so with brutal has been brutal to a lot of their plans, basically. And so he is always one to watch. And even subtle moves like, you know, you've got a pope, and this pope is nothing. I'm not excited over popes or anything like that. But one of the more interesting things is the difference between the Orthodox Christianity and Catholicism, and the different camps behind each. Putin, of course, is a big representative of Orthodox Christianity, and Orthodox Christianity is not like anything like we're used to in Western civilization at all. It is not by any means pro-Jewish, not necessarily anti-Jewish, but, well, some people think it is, and it has those tendencies. Nothing like we're used to at all.
No, it's totally different than American.
There have been talks back and forth between the certain elements of the Vatican, namely this most recent post, which caught me off guard, and Putin, and about these two particular positions between Orthodox and that. And, of course, I don't look at what the Pope says as he goes around and gives these big things. I look at what he does. And the banksters have had a long, long camp out of London and whatnot into the Vatican. And who knows what they're actually getting ready to do or along those lines. But that's something to watch. Moves between Catholicism and Orthodox, moves at the top of the Vatican, that is.
Well, I've seen this as one of the most pro-Jewish, openly pro-Jewish popes that we've had. And we've had some really pro-Jewish popes out there, probably a lot of cryptos too. This guy, Pope Francis, is it's incredible.
Well, I've never seen any pope. There hasn't been a pope in a long time, especially since like Vatican II and whatnot, that didn't play that game for whatever reason or another. Yeah, he's in Israel right now, I think. That is a very odd move, very interesting move. If the top of the Vatican were to swing to the Orthodox side, that would mean a huge break with certain elements that maybe go unseen in the Vatican. And the Vatican has one of the oldest governance-type groups. I think it's called a political chancellery. It's the oldest of its kind in the world, and they've got a tremendous number of assets. So that would be interesting. But, of course, this pope has made his overtures to the Third World and everything else. That doesn't really mean anything to me. I'm looking at who's he working out deals with. The Third World doesn't really have any power.
Right.
Who are they making deals with, you know, behind the Vatican, and what's going on in the EU? Because these moves also cloak certain moves in Germany. I mean, there was an article just put up on Alternative Right by Alexander Dugin, and Alexander Dugin is an interesting character. He meets with the Brzezinskis and all these interesting characters at the top of the English-speaking world that rule us. They decide our foreign policy and have for decades at least. And Alexander Dugin has some very strong words about German occupation via NATO and stuff like that. Things like that aren't stated on the record for no reason. Russians don't say things or do things for no reason. So that's someone I always watch. I don't think Putin has really revealed his cards yet. I don't think we really know enough about this guy. And that could be good or bad. But it's something to watch geopolitically. Mm. What you're witnessing is the failure of a system. You're witnessing the failure of a system. All across Western civilization that's been set up. And what they're trying to do is leverage that failure potentially with a war or other events into a larger global empire. And they want to make it explicit, basically. And I think that's problematic. The Russians don't want it. Certain elements in Chinese want it. Certain elements of China doesn't want it. Japan doesn't want it, although they might make overtures. No one really wants what our enemy has to offer anymore.
Yeah,
it's just whether or not
point.
What I'm looking for is who makes the big move when it really hits home that there's a game afoot here, and there's been a game afoot, and various different things like that.
Of course.
When it actually hits home on the average person is realizing there's something going on that watches geopolitics, there's something going on with Russia. The people in the English-speaking world elite, at least the whole faction, don't like Putin. They're scared of him for some reason. They don't like the German-Russian axis, which is now coming into focus. They don't like Putin says we're going to solve our internal problems our way and that type of thing. He's not playing their game at all, and he's not going to.
Well, it's hard to say how much he's just making overtures to the Jewish power elites to be able to do what he does in that country, or how much he's in league with them. Because I mean, he has been seen at the Wailing Wall with a yarmulke on, and he's met with Chabad Lubavitch rabbis within his country. And there are so many connections between,
and there's so many contradictions too that various different elements point out.
Right.
Name with the Jews. So he plays, you know, he's a KGB guy. He plays his cards very well. But for someone that likes the Jews, he's been very destructive to their particular version. The neoconservative version of the New World Order has went down in flames as he came to power. It's barely been brought to its knees.
What I'm seeing is that perhaps this Western liberal democracy is a planned destruction. So just kind of like how I think the Soviet Union might have been a planned destruction, so that these power elites would be able to buy up all the Russian resources for pennies on the dollar, which they
did.
Well,
when you get into these particular groups, you're not dealing with just one group. You're dealing with various different crews, and it's almost like reading about gangsters.
Right.
And so when you get into the fall of the Soviet Union, you've got the neoconservatives that were there, believe it or not, that wanted to fall. You have an inside KGB element, which I believe Putin belonged to at the time, that wanted Germany reunited. You have, of course, they didn't want it to be looted by a bunch of neocons, but, you know, hey, it's the way it goes. London got their way in the short term. In the long term, they got gutted out of there. The problem when you start talking about Jews controlling Russia is they don't control any foreign policy at all.
Okay.
I mean, they couldn't go
I'm
to war
sure
in Syria. Did they go to war in Syria? Did they go to war in Iran?
Well, it seems almost like the United States is being put up as this global bad guy. Because in many respects, we are. In almost all respects, the U.S. government is something of a global bad guy. Then you also have these new bad boys rising, the dark heroes, like not dark in terms of skin color, but, you know, the heroes like Vladimir Putin. And all we're getting, in terms of media about this guy is often, though he's dangerous and a little bit scary, he's strong and he's a good leader and he's tough.
Well, actually, in our media, he's basically demonized night and day. RT has made big inroads in the English-speaking world. But, you know, you can't really have it both ways. You can't say the Jews control Russia and they're building power plants in Iran and they got all this stuff going on. They basically brought us to our knees in Syria. We really can't have it both ways. There's something going on here that a lot of rabbits are missing.
So you think that Russia really is one of the main reasons that war didn't take place in Syria, because they said that they'd get involved?
You can't. We know that the weapon systems they have behind the scene, from what U.S. generals have said, that there's never going to be war with Russia. It'd just be too destructive. So if they start putting down their feet. Very, very hard. They start showing their signs, and they might have disclosed one of these weapon systems that they had ready to knock down Israeli missiles or something like that. I mean, you have to understand how white militaries work. They don't show anything until they're right on top of you. It's kind of like a stealth bomber. You know, there was always a saying that there would never be a plane to evade radar. Well, the public didn't find out about it until they bombed Saddam Hussein. So there's something in this picture we're missing on why they haven't pulled the trigger on something in the Middle East, because if America has such a dominant military, they should have no problems doing what they want to do. But they did. They couldn't get a war going for whatever reason.
I think it could have been also politics here at home. There were many people within the military who
were
standing up.
They lost control of the message. Yeah, they lost control of the message. But at the same time, you know, you've got all these different channels that talked about Israeli subs popping up and getting their missiles knocked down by Russians and stuff like that we never got, news we never got in America. And I don't know whether it's real or false, but the Russians certainly have that capabilities if they want to use it. So we don't really know anything. In my opinion, there's something missing in this particular game.
Well,
it's something they're going for, and I think you're on the right path of some type of controlled destruction. However, you have to understand something. Once you give up something, you better have – once you give up your bird in the tree, bird in the bush, you better have another secure, or you're in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. You're at the mercy of some other elements.
Well, I do agree with you that there's something – there's a lot of things that we don't know, and we probably won't know at least for some time.
And I think the conflict you're seeing in Asia is another attempt to get the war card going. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to amount to, but there's another one that they're getting going. It may get going. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, I don't see Americans willingly going over to Asia to wage a war, but I do think that they might have some kind of localized conflict there where Americans would be involved somewhere around the periphery.
That's precise. What you have with the Chinese dragon is this dragon has pissed off everyone from Vietnam to Thailand to, I mean, they just pissed off everyone. So you have a coalition that's rallied toward their territorial claims that also have territorial claims. And that, you know, you get into Asia and East Asia and one-upsmanship, and you have the recipe for a shitstorm. And I can see certain elites wanting a big shitstorm war because they're in a lot of problems. they always go from conflict to scarcity, and scarcity would be oil and their particular view on natural resources, you know. And they're always going from one to the other. It's always conflict and scarcity. So they want a war. Some parties want a war. Neocons most certainly. They couldn't get one going in the Middle East, at least not yet. It may be famous last words. It may get going tomorrow. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But, well, I think that the topic of Russia in particular has many white nationalists and other people within the larger kind of conspiracy or truth movement. Russia has them a little bit either worried or a little bit hopeful, let's say. And I can understand the points being offered on both sides. Every Saturday night on the roundtables we have here, it seems that Putin and Russia are often brought up. And even just disregarding...
Because they're starting to control certain elements of the message with RT, for better and worse. They've done a brilliant job of prying away certain left-leaning audience members by playing to that. They've done a brilliant job by prying away certain right-leaning audience. They've done, you know, these guys are mad. They have a single vision of the future, a single vision of the past, and their decision making at a geopolitical level is by and large all white Orthodox Christian, by and large. Now that may be hard to swallow, but that does make a difference in the long run, and that's what you're seeing. Now that doesn't mean they're necessarily, I don't see them marching up and down the street as Nazis or anything like that, but I do know that there was a huge moves by the English-speaking world elite when this Maxim Kalashnikov, this wild card blogger, and that's his blog name, but he's a former KGB guy or something like that, wrote this huge synopsis after Medvedev came to power, huge synopsis on how Russia needs to make its play for the white race as mm-hmm. this collapse comes. And no sooner than he wrote that, he spent 3 hours talking, or a couple months later, talking to Medvedev in the Kremlin. which is a pretty significant statement to those that are watching it. So they're looking at various different angles, and they have a plan. They're executing a plan. I'm just not certain what the end game is. I'm not willing to say I necessarily know what our enemy's willing to do. You back these guys in a corner. If they have enough technology, they've talked about some pretty crazy things. The propaganda that they're putting in front of us would lean toward the obscene that they're willing to do to maintain power. And if they can't get a war or something along those lines, some type of, maybe even internal conflict in America, if they don't think they can control it, they might go one up and do the Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. You know, holograms, false flag alien attacks, all kinds of crazy stuff. We talked about the Rosen affidavit. That thing is live. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the, you know, fighting a war against asteroids. So on one level, you've got this weird relationship with Russia. On the other level, they're getting together at the UN talking about fighting a war against asteroids. You know, you've got all this crazy cross current stuff going on. My job is just to get out a message, of course.
The way I see what's going on with the leadership in Russia is that they're acting in similar ways as to how some conservative elements of the media in America are responding to this growing amount of white discontent. In Russia, there is a large amount of white nationalism and Russian ethno-nationalism. There are neo-Nazis there. There are
What I would say on record about Putin, and then we can go on to something else, is that if the English-speaking world elite would get out of his business in Russia, you would see a whole different bill of goods. What he is doing is he realizes, in my mind, this is the way I look at it, that there's a Bolshevik revolution on my doorstep, that these guys nearly dismembered Russia for good, and I am at total war. And what he's done is exercise ruthless control internally. He does not control the message in regarding race or culture anywhere in the West. On the other hand, you've got all these human rights groups running around Russia, and every time you have a Russian nationalist or skinhead doing something, they're writing up reports in the OECD and everything else. And so what he's done is, not at first, but eventually he just cracked down as he controlled more and more of internal society. And what he wants is internal stability. And as that internal stability has happened more and more to where he has an iron vise on things, and the only reason I think he has an iron vise on things is because he knows there's movements afoot every single day to change the status quo in Russia, to get him out because of his geopolitics. And what he's done at the same time is operated absolutely ruthless geopolitical campaign across Eurasia, a ruthless geopolitical campaign across the Middle East, as we went into these big wars post-September 11, 2001. And he's done a brilliant PR campaign, so brilliant it actually could be scary, so I understand the skepticism. I'm skeptical, too. And he's done that also, and, you know, Germany plays schizophrenia. We've got to be with Russia because Russia supplies our energy needs. Well, how do those energy needs get set up with all Russia? Well, we set it up that way. You know, so you got this weird schizophrenic relationship with Germany, and, of course, Putin speaks German. And it's just – it's all a lot of speculation.
Basically. Oh, yeah. Well, let's leave that behind for now unless any callers want to call into the program and discuss it in the next hour.
I don't think we're going to know Putin's true intentions or what Russia really has done or is willing to do behind the scenes until what I call in-game exotica is over. I think they're going to play big cards. I think the Germans are now playing big cards. Financially, they're starting to whine a little loud. They're using things like the NSA scandal, which should be no big deal because everyone spies on everybody. They spy on us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're using things like that as a whipping rod, as excuses to make other moves. They're asking for their gold back from the New York Fed. So there's all these different moves afoot, all these different cross currents. At the same time, you've got some really over-the-top propaganda that the English-speaking world elite have actually hit the accelerator on. So who knows where it ends up? We talk about it no end. That's what I talk about on In-Game Exotica. But there are trends afoot. One trend that I wouldn't want to go against is Russia geopolitically winning things because they win. They've been winning for quite a while. He's on a roll.
They dominated Georgia.
He just jerked back in Ukraine. They're on a roll, and you generally don't want to bet against someone on a roll for some particular reason. I think German soft power could be that reason. I mean, they're the ones at St. Petersburg. When he got in trouble in St. Petersburg, who went and bailed him out were all the German businesses, for better or worse. So you've got to kind of look at a broader picture and something. There's moves afoot. There's moves afoot. How that works out for us, you know, to me on any given day, it doesn't really matter other than, you know, act locally and think globally. But there's big moves afoot across the planet, and you never know what this guy's going to do. He's got his eyes on some prize, and obviously an independent Russia is part of that. An independent Germany, I would say, is now part of that as well, independent of NATO. Dugin doesn't make statements, is not going to make statements like that for no reason. The Russians don't make statements for no reason anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen. Doesn't really happen.
Horst, do you want to go to a break right now, and then we'll come back? We'll take a few calls that we have on the line, and we'll move into the second hour here.
Sure.
About 5 minutes, sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. This is going to be starting with a conversation with Enoch Powell, I believe, in 1969, and then moving up until today, I believe, with some of these audio clips you'll be hearing here.
Now, are we expected to believe that you're a great
friend? You accused me of throwing the match onto the heap. Now, the heap of gunpowder in this case is the pent-up fear and anxiety for the future of the native population, which sees the extent of the numbers, the extending of the numbers and area of the immigrants.
Well, I don't think the black man's going to have the whip hand in this country. I mean,
in the areas concerned, unless something drastic is done, there will be a coloured majority in the foreseeable future over large areas. And there will be the whip hand over the white man held by the immigrant.
If you spread this sort of thing in this sort of incendiary atmosphere, you know that you are throwing the match. I mean,
this area here, I used to come down this area with my mum when I was younger. Just go shopping. This area now is literally just a complete Muslim area. It's got 19 mosques all within a stone's throw, and plans for another 6.
So driving through this area, are you unwelcome here?
Oh yeah, I'm completely unwelcome here, yeah.
What would happen if you were to walk through the streets here?
If I was walking the streets, I'd get battered. If I tried to walk from one end to the other, I wouldn't get out. Because they get on their phones so quickly. Let's say for Islam, that one there. Yeah, he's the leader. Yeah. What? What have I got to talk to you about? What have I got to talk to you about? What have I got to talk to you about?
You don't want to say about Islam and that, innit?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Yeah? So why don't you say it now?
What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Ideology, it's got no place.
Yeah?
It's got no place, bruv.
And what have you got?
Sharia law's got no place in this country.
What
do you mean, what have I got?
Go on, tell me, innit, what do you stand for?
What do I stand for?
Yeah, what do you stand for?
Stand for integration, bruv. I don't stand for paedophilic practices,
yeah?
Yeah.
What do you stand for? Go on, tell me.
What do you mean, what do I stand
racism
for? What do you stand for? How's it racism? Hey. How's it racism? How's it racist to oppose a fascist ideology?
Fascist ideology? Fascist. And what do you... You're racist.
How am I racist?
You hate
What race are Asians? What race are Muslims?
I heard. Come on, Clown.
Where are you running away from?
Oh,
because I know what you like, bruv. You have about 100 you in a minute. This f***ing little chief. This f***ing chief. Prick. You see? That is Islam.
The Muslims just punched
little prick.
There.
The thing is, you get out of this car, they'll be here from everywhere. Watch. Watch. Watch how many of them now turn up. Watch. Watch how many of them now turn up. I'll do your window up so you can't get out, because I'm telling you, look.
Everyone's got a right to protest, but I found their chanting provocative and extreme.
Stop oppression.
Police burn in hell. British police burn in hell.
Yes.
Because no real Muslim wants anyone to burn in hell.
Yeah, because what they've done. The consequences
you can't pick and choose. You can't pick and choose. Come
you
on.
You either believe or you just believe.
You know
you
what?
You choose to wear this, I choose to wear that.
You and I will have to.
You look naked on the street.
Do I look naked? Do I really? I don't look naked.
You're trying to seduce.
No one's trying to seduce me, and I'm not trying to seduce anyone. You shouldn't judge me how I try not to judge you.
In a South London street, a man with bloodied hands, carrying a knife and machete, approaches a camera and tries to justify what has just happened.
I apologise that women had to witness this today, but in our land, our women have to see the same. You people will never be safe. Remove your government. They don't care about you.
He then walks back up the road, back towards the victim of this attack who lies prone in the street, a young man believed to be a soldier. The man with blood on his hands then talks to a second man. There are also heated conversations with passers-by, people who have witnessed appalling violence, some of whom tried to stop it. But there was more violence to come. These pictures were taken shortly after the police opened fire on the two apparent attackers, who, according to witnesses, made to attack the officers.
Get back! Get back! Move back! Move back!
These pictures were taken by a man who'd been on a bus heading for a job interview the day Baghdad-style violence came to South London. Paul Davis, ITV News.
All right, welcome back to the Blitzkrieg broadcast this December 2nd, 2013. My guest tonight is Horace the Avenger. You just heard there first Enoch Powell, famous for his Rivers of Blood speech he gave, warning about the immigrant hordes who were going to take over Britain. And that is exactly what has happened, as you heard in the subsequent clips there. So this is what Britain got for taking out that evil racist Adolf Hitler. Their empire pretty much flooded inward, and all these non-white groups are now being treated as premier citizens within Great Britain, while the indigenous people there are given the short shaft. Horace, any comments about Enoch Powell or anything we heard there? Not sure if Horace is back yet. All right, you know what I'm going to do then? I'm going to play another short clip here. This is Enoch Powell talking about this issue. And again, I think this was in 1969.
We must be mad, literally mad as a nation, to be permitting the annual inflow of some 50,000 dependents. It is like watching a nation busily engaged in heaping up its own funeral pyre.
Mr. Powell, we're here in the room in which you made your most famous speech, probably, on immigration in 1968. 9 years after the speech, are we still, in your view, on a kind of funeral pyre?
Yes, I've been guilty, I suppose, of, I've said this before, of underestimating rather than overestimating. And I was just looking back at the figures that I was then talking about in 1968 for the end of the century. Do you know, my estimates, which were regarded with such ridicule then and denounced by all the academics, forgive me, they are less than the official estimate which the Franks report at the beginning of this year offered. So that upon the whole, I have leaned, perhaps it's a fault, towards underestimation of the magnitude and the danger.
And what do you see as the likely prospect now? Still, the prospect of the Tiber forming with blood?
The likely prospect is that politicians of all parties will say, well, Enoch Powell's right. We don't say that in public, but we know it in private. Enoch Powell's right. And it will no doubt develop as he says. But it's better for us to do nothing now and let it happen perhaps after our time than to seize the many poisonous nettles which we would have to seize if we were at this stage going to attempt to avert the outcome. So let it go on until a third of central London, a third of Birmingham and Wolverhampton are covered, until the civil war comes. Let it go on. We won't be blamed. We'll either have gone or we'll slip out from under somehow.
Welcome back to the show. Horace, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, great. So what we heard there was Enoch Powell and some other clips about the mess, the multicultural mess that is Great Britain, especially the urban areas. Any comment about either Enoch Powell or what has happened to Britain after defeating that evil empire of little old Germany and its few allies in Europe?
Now, they went to war, so we all went to war, so America could have a mulatto president. Basically, they were conned. They were conned in a big con job. But one thing I want to say, though, is that typically, when we analyze the last hour, we spent analyzing our problems, certain elements from within the confines of the known equation, of this closed system that the, as I call them, the pink rabbits have created. And this closed system is now Earth. They're now claiming the whole entire thing. We got bases in all of these countries and all of these different things. But they're basically, we tend to analyze and try to think of a solution within the confines of the present paradigm or present system. One of the things I've learned from Bob Whitaker, there's nothing that you could, there's no point, there's no other point that you get from me, it would be a job well served by yours truly, is that our race does not develop solutions naturally within the confines of the present paradigm. What I mean by that is when you have a big three media, the solution's not going to come out. It's not going to be an answer to the big three media in any conventional way. It's going to be something like an internet. Our race turns sand into silicone. We do not view the universe in closed system terms. So anytime we try to analyze what geopolitical moves are going to happen or what this or that, something will break for us. It won't be within the confines of the current paradigm or the system, and things will go our way. That's typically how it works in the long run. We just have to do what we have to do in the short run to prepare for that. Just like there's a bunch of idiots, when you're walking up and down the street, you've got the sheeple walking behind you, you're going to have someone way ahead of you. That's just natural law. And Bob, speaking of an article, Bob has just put up one of the, out of over 4,000 blog articles I've read from him over the years, well over 4,000 now.
Wow.
He just put up the most interesting one I've ever seen. The corner has been turned. And it says, this is the most important announcement in the history of Whitaker Online. It's now my opinion that due to all these years of our effort and various different, he's talking about various different people, are going to save our race. There is nothing inevitable about it. There is no date for it. But, of course, that's pretty historic for him to say something. So things are going on out there. Our job as pro-whites are to prepare for it. The job I've accepted is to move a message into the mainstream.
So people can find that at Whitaker, W-H-I-T-A-K-E-R, online.org/blog. So, again, WhitakerOnline.org/blog. All right, so you want to get to the phone lines and see what people have to say out there?
Sure.
All right. Hello, caller. Who is this? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, caller, you're live.
Hey, guys. What's going on, Kyle? Happy belated birthday. Boris, what's going on?
How you doing?
Welcome.
How is everybody, okay? Normal white guy here. How's everybody doing? No, I just wanted to call, and I was listening to what you were saying about human rights. When it comes to human rights, they don't apply to white people.
Oh.
I've noticed. There was a family coming from Germany that wanted to homeschool their children, and the Department of Justice made it a point to have them extradited. Four people.
Well, you get this with South Africans all the time, trying to migrate.
I felt horrible. And, they were just law-abiding citizens. They weren't here illegally. They were on visas. And they just wanted to homeschool their children. And the story went dead once they got extradited. Who knows what happened to them and their children? They might have went into child custody, child protective services, because they're not big on that at homeschooling in Germany, and we know why. But I felt terrible. You know, it's crazy, just the hypocrisy.
What might be even crazier is one morning we may see the rationale for the arguments that we don't have any human rights on this planet. We may see the rationale for their arguments one morning, and the rationale would be most shocking to most people. The funny thing about our enemies, they're driven by mythology, basically. And that's another story for another day. We might get the final answer on why they're using this type of logic. They might have an answer for us. It'll be something pretty crazy, though. Everything they do is nuts.
They're doing it for our own benefit, so that we have something to have as our adversary, so that we evolve as a human, as a white race. Yeah, that's that's one thing. Hey, perhaps they would use that as a justification. Oh, no, we're just doing it because we want to give you a challenge.
They would say something crazier than that. They would say something right out of white people don't have human rights on this planet because they're not from this planet or something crazy like that. It would be something off the wall like that. Everything they do goes to justify white genocide. Don't get me wrong, but they would try to justify it on cosmic terms.
They actually
compared us to aliens.
Yeah.
They've compared
and to Satan,
yeah,
too.
They might one morning wake up and pass us a line that may be true, may be bullshit, that we came from Mars, therefore we conquered everything from Mars, therefore genocide them. I don't know what it is, but they've got something cooked up, trust me.
I try not to take it personally, but that was just heartbreaking, though. You know, that was rough to swallow. You know, they really.
Oh yeah, our race faces heartbreaking stories every day, from at the hands of our own dear leaders.
We don't see a lot of white refugees coming from South Africa escaping genocide. They're not given any special treatment.
Well, they can't allow white migration at all, because as soon as you open the floodgates, if the closed system of white genocide is not applied to all white countries at the same time, you have problems. You have problems. As soon as there's a breakdown, they're all going to leave, because there's no loyalty anymore to anyone white.
Right.
And so any type of loyalty is going to be immediately rewarded. That's the problem. The problem is not what we think. When I talked about Kalashnikov, that famous KGB blogger, that wild card, making these big blog articles about that, and then getting called into the Kremlin and talking for them. Next thing you know, you got Zbigniew Brzezinski walking around Dugin's office and stuff like that over there. Those are big gestures. Those are things that certain elites see, because if someone were to make a play on, let's say, white working class guys in the UK or something like that at a certain age and actually offer money, they're going to leave. There's no loyalty. They have no loyalty to the people running that place. The young whites have no loyalty to the people running America. That's a problem. That's a problem. And by the way, this is a problem in every white country. This is actually Putin's biggest problem, is the racial problem, being accused of disloyalty, which he gets accused of every day for good reasons, internal Russian politics. Every one of these guys is vulnerable at the racial loyalty level, and that's what's interesting.
It's difficult for him to just come out and be pro-white.
There's a reason they're not doing it. There's a reason certain elements aren't doing it. And it'll be another one of those wild card reasons. One thing is, it's kind of like the global warming is a hoax thing. Russian hackers crushed that because they made global warming is a hoax. That this meme that came out in the 80s went viral again in the mid 90s, and then of course it became a fact when Russian hackers hacked into it was these scientists in the United Kingdom. They hacked into their computers and found out they'd been cooking the books during that big global warming conference thing. And before any of that can happen, you pretty much have to have memes seeded. If the meme's not seeded, you're not going to be able to deliver the death blow like that. But once the memes are seeded, anyone that wants to attack the groups behind those memes, the elites that are ruling those memes, well, you have something going for you. You know, you're not going to bring down the Soviet Union by going to war in Cuba or anything like that. You bring down the Soviet Union by walking in the Soviet Union and, well, going with Samizdat, that type of thing. That's how that worked.
Hey, caller, we have a few other people who want to get on the program here. Any other things you wanted to comment upon or ask of Horace the Avenger of White Rabbit Radio?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to send a message to if there's any of those pink rabbits out there listening, you're going to lose. You're going to lose.
Yeah.
You lost control. All right?
Well,
thanks guys.
For calling
I really
in.
Appreciate it. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go back to the call board here. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who is this?
Hi, this is Ed the Red. Can you hear me?
Ed the Red, we can hear you.
Thanks for taking my call, Kyle and Horace. I'll make it quick. I don't want to take up too much time, but I have a comment, and then maybe just a brief question about the strategy of spreading our propaganda. I don't have any children, but I have a lot of nieces and nephews, so I've been spending some time with them over the holiday. And lately, we were watching Disney Channel. And I don't know if you guys remember back in the 90s that they would do the diversity propaganda, but it'd be like if there's a group of six kids, it'd be like five white kids and one black kid. But now noticed with this whole white genocide thing, I could literally not find one white kid in like most of these shows. I mean, it went from being, you have to include one or two non-whites for diversity, but with the white genocide thing ramping up, it's like, I don't know white people, in the shows.
Yeah, I think this is really what I'm, well, it's what I'm talking about with them just going overboard. I think this is going to turn off those people that are still hooked up to the tube. I think this is just going to slap
them. They wonder why Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit do so well.
Yeah,
can you hear
exactly.
me?
And I guess my question real quick is, because I try to spread this stuff in my day-to-day life, but what do you think is the best angle to approach, like, the average guy? Like, my brother, he's not a white nationalist, but I guess you could call him white nationalist white. I mean, he purposely married
a white woman. How do you talk to friends and families and close friends about race?
Yeah, because I can talk to them about pretty much every issue, except you can only go so far to where they just shut you out, like, especially with the Jewish issue. But with the average, you know, day-to-day guy,
friends and family are harder to convince than complete strangers. And it doesn't matter if you – let's say you go to your brother and you say, we need to go see this movie. You need to go see this movie. He might go see it. He may never go see it. It's hard to convince friends and families. What you do is you work in memes various different times over and over again and point out things and never be forceful, never get into arguments, or never start fighting over it. You basically, you know, if friends and family are just difficult to convince, it's much easier to convince complete strangers, generally speaking, unless they already see eye to eye on everything, which is rarely the case.
Well, I'd say that perhaps using things that they have a reference point for, something that they might have seen on the television.
Right.
Okay, so this doesn't mean you have to you have to watch the television, but go find stories that they might have heard about, or the knockout game. You can start there, and then once you have a little bit of an inroad with something that they're familiar with, you can just make it seem like you're just exploring these thoughts yourself with them rather than preaching to them, saying, I know the statistics and I know I know everything that's going on. Just say, well, ask some questions maybe. Ask them about it. Well, how were things when you were alive? You know, when you were young. The old people aren't dead. I didn't mean to imply
that. What I would tend to do is point out some contradiction that's obvious that you're not talking about, and just say, "Have you ever noticed? Have you ever noticed that this is, that only white guys talk about, this hate stuff, this hate. If the conversation, depending on what the conversation's about, you know, talk about how this is only white, just work it in on how this is only whites that ever have to deal with any of this stuff on some level. You know, let them know it's not universal, because certain elements of our race still think this stuff's universal. You know, you get Bill O'Reilly talking about, well, hate and this hate and this hate, hate is everywhere. But the fact of the matter is, only white guys are ever going to be talking about hate on something like Fox News in Western civilization in front of 40 million white viewers. Hate laws are never going to apply to blacks en masse, unless they attack Jews. Hate laws are never going to apply to – hate speech codes are never going to apply to non-whites in Canada. Hate speech laws are never going to apply to Muslims in France. It's just never going to happen. That's all fantasy stuff. It's just another code word for, you know, anti-white. Just point out certain contradictions, subtle, in a non-aggressive way over and over again.
Now that people are really having a hard time finding jobs, you can point out that affirmative action, well, that's racism against white people. And then you could point out the contradiction that we have racist policies against white people, yet they say that race doesn't exist.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There are also different YouTube videos, clips that are short enough, such as the ones that WhiteRabbitRadio.net has put out. Horst done a great job with those that can be shown to these people, because it's done in a professional way. They realize that there are people who have thought about this, that they're making compelling arguments, that it looks good. And I think that's a good way to reach them. But also, you know, even just clips of Jamie Foxx saying on Saturday Night Live how great it is to kill all the white people. Hey, use some scaremongering when you can to say, hey, this is real. Now they're knocking people out in the street. They don't like us. They're being taught to hate us, to want to kill us, to clap and laugh when somebody says that they get to kill all the white people. How scary is that? So there's a lot to work with, and it all depends on who your audience is as well.
Exactly. I guess I'll just leave by saying I think we get a lot of sympathy. I mean, really, there's no one, unless they're just a complete moron, we get a lot of sympathy when it comes to, like, the black crime issue, even immigration, things like that. But really, I mean, what good is that if you can't point, you know, to the puppet master? That's our biggest stumbling block, is the Jewish issue. Just the overall, you know, the actual puppet masters is where I find that people seem to really struggle with this message.
Well, Horace, I've seen, I think, Bob Whitaker write about this, that you don't want to necessarily point out the culprit when people aren't recognizing that a crime has taken place. First, you have to get them to realize.
Well, everything in my world exists in pro-white or anti-white. People talk about white nationalists. Horace, you're white nationalist, you're neo-Nazi, you're this or that. Actually, my world just exists in pro-whites and anti-whites. I only focus on the whites. We want to focus the attention on white and power, Jew or Gentile alike. I lump them into all one big camp of anti-whites. And that's what we want to do, is direct the firepower toward that. And if anything, you want to point out the contradiction that the culprit uses to start getting them to understand that there is a crime being committed. How Whites Took Over America Part 2 is one little example of that. And then, of course, it's stage 2 or stage 3. They're going to figure that out on their own. What you have to understand, there's three steps to the psychology of a con. The first step is no one wants to admit they've been conned. They will not admit it out of embarrassment. The second step is they'll admit it, and at that point in time, they generally will laugh at themselves. That's human nature. Okay, this guy ripped me off or this or that. Most of the listeners have been in this on some level. The best thing to do at that point is to get them laughing at something. And then the third and final step is anger at the con artist. But you have to go through, you know, to go from reverse to drive, you got to go through neutral, and it's a stepping stone. A lot of times you get in the pro-white camps, and they're at the third and final step, anger at the con artist. Well, most of the other guys are in the first two camps. Most of our race is now moving into the second camp. And that's kind of one of the reasons we're using satire. We want them laughing at the con. It's very important to get them laughing at the con to move them into the third phase. But this is a process. It's not... it's not anything other than process.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Well, thanks for calling in. Appreciate you coming on the show here.
Okay, thank you. You guys keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep listening.
Thanks.
All right. I still have a few people on the call board here. Next caller, you are live. Who is this?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. A little quiet,
okay,
though.
Okay, this is Marcus. Yeah, this is
Marcus.
Marcus,
welcome.
How you doing?
Yeah, good,
hi. And hi to your guest there as well.
Thank you.
Your videos, they're very good. I like them a lot. They're good to spread on Facebook, you know. People spoof there all the time, goofing around. And this is the stuff that anyone could watch, not only people who are quote unquote awake or whatever. It's just fun to watch for everyone. So
thank
like
you.
That a lot.
Thank you. That is the whole objective.
Yes. And it's very important to broaden the whole objective, as you said. I agree totally. To get it out of the box that they put it in. With these Hollywood movies.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting developments I've seen is the ability to surf the internet from a TV, to where you can be able to pull up a channel like YouTube or Vimeo or even a website and watch a video of various different formats on TV. I think that's an interesting move, and a good move, actually.
When I saw it, I laughed. It was very funny.
Well, thank you.
That's how you can change the mind. I don't want to talk about everything as much as you want.
Marcus, we're having a little interference here, so you're not coming through all that clear right there. You can try talking again if you'd like. Marcus? Yeah, you're sounding a little better now.
No, better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, maybe I'll put the microphone closer to my mouth. Is that better?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you spoke about Russia, for example, and Russian-German relations. And as we all know, or at least I know that Germany and Russia and all the other allies, they don't have a peace treaty, and Russia is still occupying a large...
And Marcus,
Marcus,
if you add renegade.broadcasting on Skype,
mm-hmm.
I think you might already have this added. I can bring you on that way in just a few minutes, and we can talk through that. It might come through clearer. How about that?
Okay, I'll try that. All right.
Okay, because we're having a hard time hearing you. All right, so I'll try to bring him up that way.
All right. See you.
Okay. Well, actually, I can do it right now. And then Jim is calling in, so I'm going to be sure to pick up Jim's call. But first, we'll talk to Marcus. I think he's a fan of anti-racist Hitler. He's a German himself. I know there were some people who are huge Hitler fans. They thought that it might have been... I don't know, sacrilegious something to use them in.
I got a couple nasty emails. I thought it was rather ironic. This is a great lesson in wordism. The idea that a Nazi or National Socialist would email me upset that Hitler, that Hitler was an anti-racist and genocide the Jews. They weren't upset that he wiped the Jews out in Israel. They were upset over how he did it. And that doesn't make any sense to me. I thought it was just rather ironic. You know, you do an animation and Hitler wipes out the Jews using diversity in under 10 minutes, and National Socialists were upset.
Yeah. It was. I thought it was a very clever video for sure. Marcus.
Yeah, I'm back. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you much better. So you saw anti-racist Hitler. You think you think that one was a good one as well?
Yeah. We came out of his Haunabu UFO, and then just turns around the whole propaganda against them.
He's actually in a time machine. Most people.
The blocker, right?
Yeah, that's a time. We use that to represent a time machine. One of the writers came up with that. I thought it was genius.
It's the blocker. I heard about that before. They really were working on that. You know, that's all kind of speculative.
They were working on all kinds of... No, well, some of it isn't. Some of it's government documents coming out of Poland after the fall of the Berlin Wall. They got all these weird documents. They had all kinds of weird experiments going on, crazy stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
That we just don't fully know about. But that's they were working on Project Kronos is what it was called. But
Project Kronos.
There were various different experiments going on, yes.
Time bending.
Yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff, yeah.
Space flight.
So, Marcus, what were you saying about Russian and German relations before when we weren't really able to hear you very well?
Okay, so Germany is still occupied in its 1937 borders. I just had a correspondence with Rodney Martin, and he sent a letter to his senator asking for a peace treaty between Germany and the United States. And... there are people in Germany as well who write letters to the UN, to the Allied Control Council, and so forth. So I think this is a very, very good thing to add this to this march, because people march all the time for peace, right? Peace in Iraq, peace in Vietnam, and what have you. But if you have a sign, we want peace with Germany, you know. Most people don't even know that we're still at war.
You got NATO there. You've got everything there. As Alexander Dugin said in the article over in Alt-Right, when that, I believe it's Alt-Right, they that Germany is an occupied country. Yeah.
Mark, yeah, we're getting quite a bit of background noise
and
from you right now.
We Americans don't get to vote on NATO leaves. Or obviously, we would have pulled it out of there a long time ago. It doesn't make any sense to us. Just like the Korea situation.
Yeah, it might be a little loud here. Christmas music.
More than just a little.
Oh, really?
Well, Marcus, I'm sorry to cut this short, but it is pretty loud. Any final thoughts you wanted to add to the conversation tonight?
No, not really. I mean, since it's so loud here and it's not a good place to talk to you right now, I'll call into another show.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for the call, Marcus.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
All right. As I said, we still have one more lined up on the call board, and then I do have some requested questions from the chat room after that. So I don't know. Do you need to take a break before we continue on? Or are you
good rock to go? And roll.
All right.
Go on.
I think this would be Jim here who sang on our last show together. Jim, welcome back.
Yes, Horace, I got a question for you.
Rock and roll.
What do you think?
Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you think about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? Do you think that it's possible they might form a like a counter force to NATO and perhaps have a better economic
well, that's what
system?
What we have is a big thesis, antithesis, synthesis going on, and I'm curious of the synthesis. On one side, you've got NATO and all this type of stuff. The other side, you've got Shanghai Cooperation Organization. On one side, you've got the Western Anglo style capitalist type system, the banksters, as I call it, the Federal Reserve, the private central banking system. On the other side of the equation, you've got a rally within the BRICS countries to bring out alternative forms of clearing, which is until you do that, you're not going to compete with them. And so I don't know what the synthesis of all this is going to be, but yes, you've got a lot of opposition.
One thing that I notice is that the Jews, they seem to always go after these countries that have a strong state sector that siphons off some of the profit to help the people. For example, like Libya and Iraq and Syria. It seems to me that the Jews want total control of all nations by the corporations, by the multinational corporations, and any country that seems to want to have a strong state sector is the ones that they go after.
Like Iran as well for the past few decades.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Our enemy is a crew. They're not a word. They're a crew. They're a biological organism with different factions and different components. Some we focus on, others we don't. The ones we don't, I'm more afraid of than the ones we know about. The devil we don't know, as they say.
One thing that you said that I found rather interesting, system about the younger Jews, some of them coming over to our side.
There's a lot of they're being attacked in the street. What has happened historically, and I believe this to be a fact, is that many times these young Jews are being attacked for being white. They're not necessarily wearing yarmulkes or anything else. And then of course it becomes they attacked them for being Jewish. It's kind of like in France. A lot of those that got attacked aren't wearing Jewish clothing. They're being attacked for being white, and they know that. It's kind of they're getting more and more pissed off at their own elite for not addressing this. Plus, they're alienating from white friends that just don't trust them, the pro-white media that doesn't trust them, when in fact they don't really have any. I don't think the average Jew has power over anything. I don't think they ever will.
Do you think it's possible that there might be more Jews that come like Brother Nathaniel and Benjamin Friedman that'll be against the Jewish mindset? The younger generation of Jews, they might reject the methods of the older Jews and perhaps...
It's happening in Israel. In Israel, there's basically... If Israel didn't have enough external conflict, if you were in the words of one pro-white, I can't remember who said it, just build a large wall and put them there, there'd be a civil war between the religious Jews and the non-religious Jews. Yes, our problem is an operating manual, constantly putting out these closed systems. It's Talmudic in nature. It is not just a word, though. It is a biological organism, and they're driven by their own mythology. to a certain extent. You know, you've got the Moses and the Israelites. We talk about the ones that think they're the Israelites, the Jews, all the time, like you just did. One thing you don't talk about is Moses. I go into Moses all the time. I didn't go into it in this podcast, but I can give you some interesting questions. Our enemy is very interesting. They've revealed some interesting statistics that most pro-whites just haven't even picked up on. All kinds of interesting stuff.
Well,
I'm sorry?
Well, if possible, since everything is changing and evolving, that the Jews might eventually evolve into a race that is not, shall we say, destructive, even a constructive
race.
Henry
Kissinger said anyone that's been persecuted for 2,000 years is doing something wrong. And what they do wrong is they always listen to rabbis. So the question is, who tells the rabbis what to do? Because they're always running into problems as a group. And so you start looking as the group as a whole, and it goes back into their mythology. I mean, when Moses comes out of Egypt, about 89% of the Israelites get wiped out. You know, so when you go into this particular equation, most of us focus on the concept of the mythology of the Israelites and the Talmud and everything else, when in fact all that was handed down to Moses at Mount Zion and all that kind of stuff. What we'll go into is the speculation over Moses.
Some people say that Moses didn't even exist. I mean, it's all
no. I believe they're using previous stories. I can't prove it, but I believe they're using previous stories to tell their stories. I believe there is a Moses here. That's our problem.
You know what I saw recently.
In fact, let me say this right now, that the Y chromosome. When we talk about Israel or right to return to Israel, we know that exists in the maternal line, right? There's an X chromosome, ancient Jewish mother, and if you have those genes, you get into Israel, right? You understand that, the Kohanim and all that. When it comes to the Jewish priest class, they're not looking at the X chromosome at all. They're looking at the Y chromosome, which is only carried for males. So to get into Israel, they're testing for something specific on the female line. However, the research and all the stuff they're putting in front of us, all in the propaganda and other things down different avenues, always deal with males, always deals with Y chromosome, and the only way you can test for that is in males. And they brought out the time period that their Y chromosome, their priest class, developed. They brought out the exact time period because they've done the testing. They brought it out right in front of the world. Most people just haven't put it together.
Yeah. Well, I read
that's another, another show, though.
Jewish eugenics. And it talked about how throughout the century the Jews have upgraded their racial stock, their DNA, by mating with the most intelligent of the Gentiles. Now, obviously, Judaism is a biological. This is, I think, was a book by Mullins, Eustace Mullins, the biological Jew. So the traits of the Jew are, I would say, mostly primarily biological. I mean, they have bred specifically for these negative and destructive traits.
Let me just say this right now. The discussion that we would go into wouldn't be atypical, and it would be based on the propaganda and the science that has come out. They're not the same group that they were, let's say, 2,000 years ago or anything like that. You're dealing with a crew, and they're a group within a group is what I believe to a certain extent. The ones that are most dangerous are not going to be in the synagogues with yarmulkes.
I think that they have something of a false opposition, or at least a controlled opposition that's out there.
They're very good at that. They're very good at closed systems, good at operating like that.
I don't know if you caught this, though. Noam Chomsky recently came out and basically admitted that anti-racism is actually anti-white.
Sure. Yeah, they're going to come out with that. They're going to come out with their intentions. You have to reveal your intentions, and they know this. If you've ever pro-whites have known this for decades, that they're not hiding anything when you get down to it. They can't. You can't be successful. You got to be overt with the universe. That's the belief, at least. You got to tell people what you're up to if you plan on being successful. And they're bold. They're very bold. But at the same time, we have to understand something, that someone that wages war by deception, that's successful for hundreds and hundreds of years, is not going to move to the center of the earth and announce that they're waging war by deception. So there's somewhat a contradiction in operating tactics. One that wages war by deception puts something at spear point, at all times has something at spear point, driving into a population, driving into a scenario. Then they break spears. And once they break spears, everyone's so thankful and so wonderful that the spear's out of their side, and that's when they make their play. The Jews are actually not very good at this strategy. They never break spears. They drive and drive and drive and get kicked out. They put themselves in the center of the planet. Zionism put them in the center of the planet. And now we're looking at a group, in my opinion, the average Zionism is at spear point, basically. So We can talk about this, but if you understand the operating procedures of waging war by deception, there's a big contradiction between what they're doing and their success historically. So there's something, I think there's something that the average pro-white is actually missing, but I think we're on the right track.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the Khazar theory?
Go ahead.
Do you think that the Khazar theory, do you think that the Ashkenazi Jews
I have a word for you. And the Khazar theory, I think, is that's just a word, but that's just a word. The word, the correct word is Neanderthal. The correct question is, how many genes do Indo-Europeans share with Neanderthal? How much genes does humanity in general share with Neanderthal? The German researchers at the Max Planck Institute said something interesting, and I can actually pull up the source. They mapped the genome for Neanderthal, and what they said, and this is one of the questions we all have that have heard this conversation, is what they said is that this idea that humanity is 4% Neanderthal is a misnomer. That 4% is not global. It's isolated in one particular population in one particular segment. And that population across the Middle East and across the Caucasus may be upwards of 20% of 20% Neanderthal or something to that degree. In fact, I can pull up the actual source for this, which is a pretty crazy conversation on German TV. So we've been sold a bill of goods and propaganda. Neanderthals going to date the blonde girl in the Geico commercial. Neanderthals are harmless. Neanderthals are wonderful and clever, you know, by the same people that told us that black crime doesn't exist and blacks are going to save us like Will Smith from Aliens and everything else. It's an interesting propaganda. As pro-whites, we look at a very narrow spectrum of propaganda. I try to widen that out for my audience. But I have questions. I don't necessarily have the answers. But that would be the question. Because the areas the Khazars came from are areas that the ones that just mapped the genome are actually saying. And, of course, you want to see something that you've never seen before on the Neanderthal question, go to themandus.org. Themandus.org.
Are you saying that the Jews, Ashkenazi Jews, are essentially Neanderthals?
I'm saying there's a percentage there that there's a big question mark. On May 10th, 2010, the Pabo co-researcher, that's Swant Pabo or whatever, the big researcher on Neanderthals, on the new study, Johann Kraus, said on mid-German TV network that the people of the Middle East, the Semites, were at least from 10 to 20% Neanderthal. And what he did was he validated on German TV what is called the Iceman hypothesis that many thought was ridiculous. And that's, of course, the pro-whites historically point to the Khazar area, the Caucasus. That what he's saying is that area, most of these genes are concentrated in one area. And if you go to themandus.org, you're going to see another meme put out that counters the Hollywood meme that Neanderthals weren't exactly all nice and hip that we were led to believe. Go there. Read it.
Okay. So I'm just trying to, you know, the difference between Homo sapiens and Neanderthal. I'm trying to say...
Well, we don't have a model. We don't have a model for Neanderthals to become Cro-Magnons, and we don't have a model for Cro-Magnons to model Indo-European. There's no evolutionary model for that. So there are just questions. And, of course, Russians have inserted themselves into this equation just in the last week about ancient human hominid interbreeding and question marks of interbreeding. And there's questions. I don't necessarily have answers, but I have questions. But the Germans, once they cracked the Neanderthal genome, let something huge slip.
Yeah, I saw a story recently about how we could have possibly come from the interbreeding of an early monkey and an early pig. That's where humans came from.
Mythology has all this stuff in it in one form or another, but we don't really know what to make of it. So they're lowering the bombshell on us one after the other. I'm interested because this meme about Neanderthals has been around the pro-white circles for quite a while. Ever since the Iceman cometh and all that, those particular researches. But the Germans are actually confirming this. On that particular network have definitely put question marks in everyone's minds on what's going on with this Neanderthal. The propaganda coming out of Hollywood would lead me to believe that we're being lied to about something. I just take the direct opposite, and I don't know where it's leading to. The memes down other channels regarding the Y chromosome, regarding the Moses, and I used to be one that used to believe that Moses did not exist, that it was all fairy tales and everything else. I believe they're using mythologies to tell a story, a very important story, that they're going to be telling us. That is the Y chromosome hypothesis. That's not the X chromosome, the Ys that they're testing for down the male lines. That has something to do with our elite in the Western world, no doubt about it.
Some people think that the different races were seeded by beings from other sources, other galaxies. I mean, I heard someone that said that the Nordic race actually born by Nordic, they came from Poldi.
Well, what it does is it comes from mythology. Our ancestors believe they descended from Odin, the gods, and everything else, Zeus, that type of thing. That is what our ancestors believe. Everyone else's ancestors say similar things. And when you start talking about the white gods, what is shocking isn't what our ancestors say, it's what many things that are coordinated all around the world. For instance, the Japanese say their whole entire civilization was given to them by the Yamamoto. They aren't Japanese looking. That's one of the reasons they showed up on Hitler's doorstep, their ambassador, that their civilization too comes from the Yamamoto. There's all these strange things going on when regard to the quote-unquote white gods, and I don't know where it's all going or where it's all been. Because, you know, when it comes down to the genetic research, the six or what is it, seven mothers of ancient Europe, they're not telling us anything about the Y chromosome, their fathers, and there's questions about it. There's questions. They're not giving us answers. Every once in a while, they let something slip that's tantalizing.
Yeah. Just because something's a myth doesn't mean there's a reality behind that myth.
It doesn't mean that at all. There can always be something in the equation that we're missing.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in tonight. We've got just a little bit of time left, and I wanted to ask a few other questions of Horace here. Anything else you wanted to conclude with?
No, that's it. Thanks a lot, Kyle. Thanks, Horace.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Well, thanks for calling in. Interesting discussion. I like getting into these areas, and there's definitely something about this Neanderthal connection
When you bring out the propaganda angle to pro whites in Hollywood and how it's been presented, and they start thinking about it. You see, we think in terms of we have almost been programmed to think in terms of race, black and white, in simple terms. What they're talking about, really in propaganda, where their money is, Neanderthal. And their money is, I hate to say this, but this is what I always say, their money is in aliens. That's where their money is.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's their propaganda.
You know, there was a recent, I think it was National Geographic, that had Neanderthals portrayed on the cover, and they portrayed them as redheads.
No, go to them and us. Go to themandus.org. There were definitely different breeds of them, and I have questions, not answers. Go to themandus.org. That is not a pro-white. That is an independent analysis, an independent reconstruction, a legitimate independent reconstruction that most people don't know is out there that they don't want you to see.
What I find fascinating also is that somebody posted a picture of Ron Perlman, the Jewish actor, in the chat. And I've actually seen his second film, which was Quest for Fire, which is about early ape creatures, apparently our ancestors interbreeding different tribes of them. So there's something to it. And yeah, he does look like some kind of primitive creature. And interesting that he'd be cast in that role, of course.
Well, Neanderthals are presented as very collegial primates, when in fact they would have been some of the most violent primates to ever exist, period. There could be no doubt about it. Again, go to themandus.org and look at some of the different researchers assembled out of our own mythology even. Various different things they're saying. And I have questions. I don't necessarily have answers, but I'm really skeptical of any meme thrown down my throat from Hollywood.
Well, speaking of mythology, I want to get to a question we had from the chat. I've actually had this question being posed to me since the last show we did, when people were going through and listening to your archives. They heard you talk about one of the scenarios that could be unfolding in the future, and it deals with the mythological character of Jesus, the return of Jesus. And this is actually something that is somewhat discussed in a lot of different mythological tellings. It could be Kalki, who is being portrayed here, the person who will bring in the Satya Yuga and get rid of the Kali Yuga. Maitreya in the Buddhist tradition, Maitreya Buddha. There are a lot of different stories that talk about a character coming and basically wreaking vengeance upon the planet in a somewhat violent way to his enemies.
What we have in the Book of Revelation, which our enemies, the playbook at hand right now would be the Book of Revelations on some way. It's just we don't know what we're reading or how to read it. It comes from the Greeks. And what you have, you really don't know what's showing up. You only know the order in which they show up. So the first you get an Antichrist who every knee shall bow, who annihilates everything. And then, of course, you get that person annihilated, and every knee shall bow and rules with an iron fist. So it's kind of an interesting combination. We don't know what's coming if you want to start playing out the mythologies. But it, obviously, if you're going to play it out, it isn't going to happen. There's a handful of different ways it could. I think that the elites, Jew and Gentile alike, on all sides of the Western camp, are fed up with the big three religions. I think they want them over with. I think that's what this all this anti-Islam stuff is about. I think there's certain elements that want a big third world war and that type of thing, and to make it cataclysm, to bring out their apocalyptic type thing. I really believe that they have that cooked up. I don't know if they'll do it.
Do you think this is the alleged Illuminati plan, about the third world war and the Luciferian religion that would be replacing the world religions of today?
Well, the religion they're going with is the Gaia is the earth-based religion, which is very religious, this environmental stuff. And I'm not talking about just caring for the earth. I'm talking about this closed system they've created on this planet. We're running out of water. You know, a few hundred years ago, they were measuring the Irish's window and telling them that taxing them for air. Now they call it carbon credits. Everything's geared toward the environment, saving the environment, serving the environment. And it's all this new green-based religion. That's the religion they're going with. How they get there, I don't know. Even in the propaganda, I mean, you've got, what's it, the day the Earth stood still and Cloud 2 comes and tells us we're destroying the planet, so they're decided to destroy us. Keanu Reeves, there's this alien disguised as a human, you know. And who knows what they're willing to do with technology, and who knows what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I never get upset over, you do have a certain listener that is very fantasy prone, and they're worried that this elite is all powerful. And what I tell them is if there's something here that we haven't calculated, I know based on mythology, and I don't care which ones you want to read from the Reg Veda on down, that there's something coming for them. You know, so that's nothing to worry about. We just have to get through it. And it would be we would be in a much greater position if that were to happen than anything else. So that's the least of my concerns. If these guys are so crazy as to pull the trigger on a false flag, something crazy like a false flag alien invasion, which I don't know how they would do without a lot of global cooperation, but let's say they do that. That's nothing to worry about either. It's going to come down one way or another. Sooner or later, the game's all comes down. Sooner or later, the Sith Lord, if he's here, has to play his cards. If the red hippo's real, because he needs us. We don't really need him.
Okay, so you have spoken, though, about a potential return of Jesus and what that entails. You said basically he takes out the Antichrist who came before him and who was trying to get people to bow down, and this Jesus who then takes his place pretty much and rules with an iron fist for...
Well, what I've speculated on is a convergence of mythology, which is what they're doing in propaganda. They're converging mythologies. I mean, the shows that are getting the views, Ancient Aliens, stuff like that, there's a convergence of mythology and there's a convergence of our enemies' memes at the top, Friends and Allies a lot, and I don't know where they're going with it. What I've speculated on is an in-game Exotica-style discussion on what I would expect to see. One, answering, this was an answer to a question that I get asked. What if these guys are real out there? What if our race has cousins? And that's what my main sleuth calls them, cousins. And that's accurate. Bigger, stronger, more successful civilization, a cousins that seeded us. What would we expect to see if these guys are coming here? Well, one thing you're going to expect to see from our enemy is outright panic. That's just common sense. Another thing you're going to expect to see is they're obviously going to be smart enough to set them up in such a way that they're not getting out of it. Obviously, something bigger in nature, that's what we're dealing with, something macro to us. We put microorganisms, you're dealing with something macro, and I don't really have anything to worry about in that case. My job is just to do the work in front of me. So that's what you're hearing me speculate on. And obviously, there's a clear opening if you want to be crazy enough to pay out the Book of Revelations, I would suggest you don't try it, you know, with the blood flowing to the horse's bridle. I know all about these mythological characters because I've read all about them, and there is a clear opening based on titles in this book for a deception. And what the elite may walk into, in my particular opinion, is they've been the ones that's been deceived.
Do
you understand?
I would agree, yeah.
And there's many different ways for them to interject themselves into this particular scenario to help us if they are willing to do so. Now, this is highly speculative. I don't know anything. I only know what I see. I've seen nothing to conclude it can happen. I've seen nothing to conclude it couldn't happen. One thing has our enemy very spooked, and it has them very spooked from a specific date and time when their main symbol got burned down in front of us, and they've been running wild ever since. I just don't know what our enemy fully consists of genetically. What aren't they telling us? And memes they're putting out are pretty crazy.
So you're saying that pretty much this alleged return of Christ would be something more akin to the Thor movies, where you have Asgardians, basically cousins who look like us from some other kind of realm.
Well,
you can only imagine.
You can only imagine if you think in terms of think in terms of titles and start looking across mythology at titles and start looking at the Book of Revelations, Lord of Hosts, Lord of Heavens. I know who that is. How would he play this event? Because these guys, if they're real, they're going to crush whatever's here. I mean, there's no way around it. How would they play that out? And that's something, that's a game I play. That's a game I play when asked the questions. And, of course, it's highly speculative. But one thing that becomes clear is you got this character over and over again. And the big thing about Jesus I've come full circle on, it is one significant event that most pro-whites miss, including yourself. The only act of violence Jesus takes is against our enemy, when he kicks them out of the temple. And, of course, if you know anything about the temple, Talmudism, you know that Talmudism, one whole section of Rome was Talmudic by conversion, and they were running the gold, they loaned gold into circulation into Rome, and this goes back to the Roman historian, I forget his name, but Bob Boyce talks about it. And there would be a scenario where one of these guys, and I don't know, let's say the Jesus, obviously in the stories behind him, myth or real, whatever, he commits an act of violence against them in the temple on some level, and where they were doing this money changing, where they were doing this, they were running their racket, their Talmudism racket. And that's what's interesting about Jesus.
He whips them, right?
I'm not quite certain. My main sleuth would be the one that has forgotten more about the actual interpretations of this stuff. We have this bill of goods sold to us about the Sanhedrin and about these different sects, whatnot, in the middle of the earth at that time. And I have a feeling they're not everything it's cooked up to be. And some of them, the Pharisees, the Sanhedrin, of course, the Sadducees disappeared off the face of the planet. You have all this mystery behind these different elements prior to the formation of Christianity, these different shamanic elements, if you will. You've got the Zoroastrian religion, which was major in the way that the Magi show up in the New Testament. You've got all these references to Greek mythology also through the Bible, Tartarus and all kinds of interesting stuff. So there's a confluence of different things. But one of the games I play is when asked the question of, like, if these guys are real, they're going to show up in here in a way we can't imagine, and it's probably going to be in some type of deception over this New World Order business, and the elites are probably going to find out that they've been deceived. You know, they thought these guys weren't coming back here, and lo and behold, they are. What happens if you plan a fake UFO invasion and you're weaponizing the planet? And that's what they've really done, if you know anything about the Rosen affidavit. At every step, they've weaponized the planet. And they're always – the trend within the war scenario, the trend is always – there's a subtrend that's become dominant, especially it's almost unavoidable since the asteroid meme has come out. We're going to defend the planet against asteroids. And that is, they're always putting up these elaborate air defenses. Even over there in China, this latest big deal over China is that they're going to have air defenses over these islands, the Senkaku or the Diu Islands. And it's always over air defense, NATO, air defense. Russia's going to attack us or Iran's going to attack us. We've got to have all these upper theater air defense. Space-based weapons, well, we got to defend against asteroids. Now, the final Rosen affidavit is, well, we have to defend against aliens. And we don't know until they pull the trigger on it, but there's obviously something to it. You know, it says first comes the communism, then comes war on terror, then comes the nation of concerns, and now they've alleviated the nation of concerns. Peace breaks out with Iran, at least for the minute, and it looks like North Korea, I don't think they're going to do anything. I could be wrong. But then, of course, the last shoe to drop is the latest shoe to drop this year, this last year, is the war against asteroids. And then the last one is war against aliens. Now, what happens if they planned all this elaborate hoax, but the hoax is on them?
Yeah, I think it
that's
could
what
be.
You know. You got the type of listener I have. There's two types. There's those that are, you know, they're rational, they're realistic. I'm in this camp, actually. This is probably the one of the reasons I've developed a successful audience by talking about this stuff. Is I'm a skeptic, that I'm agnostic on the question. I can honestly say I don't know what's real and false. But at the same time, the question is most provocative. What happens if you plan an elaborate hoax? There are elements of an ancient paleo-ancient civilization with long life still here. You planned an elaborate hoax to take control of the planet based on the fact that there's not going to be a second coming, and there is. And the problem is, as Aryans, we know nothing about the first coming. We
okay.
don't.
Yeah,
we don't know anything about that.
That's an interesting point.
The Mahabharata, 90% of the Mahabharata has never been translated. We're not allowed to read most of this stuff. Vast majority of the Sumerian cuneiforms, not translated. They're stuck in basements or vaults. They're not telling us anything.
Well, I just wanted to say that people can listen to us as we wrap up this show. If they go over to renegadebroadcasting.com and then just click play in the stream. Horace, your idea is that... if Jesus is coming back, he will not be necessarily friendly to the Jewish powers who...
I would imagine if something, you know, if it's a deception, it's going to be rather obvious. If something goes wrong in that deception to pro-whites, generally you're pretty intelligent, it's going to be obvious as well.
Right.
I'm going to have to see it to know exactly what's going on if they go down this road, and that's a huge if. But
yeah.
based on the propaganda, you have to take it somewhat serious as far as, you know, holograms and Jesus arising in UFOs or something crazy like that. Because I have a feeling that, well, we know for a fact based on their comments that they're crazy enough to think in those terms. But there's many different ways they could go about it, and they don't necessarily have to use Jesus. But I think it would be tantalizing to use these various different elements from Islam and Jesus and Christianity. Simply for those particular reasons, you're going to have to wrap up these big three religions if that's what they want to do, and you can't wrap them up without an apocalypse. That's the crazy thing about them.
And you could wrap them up with Jesus, actually.
You could wrap them up with sophisticated holograms that you could touch. You could half of the planet believes in aliens. They've seen no evidence of it other than things in the sky that could be the military-industrial complex. What does that tell you? Someone's pulled a hoodwink over in the propaganda element regarding UFOs. So if you have that type of technology potentially and you're willing to use it for a hoax, what could you accomplish? And what's going to backfire? Because these guys have things backfiring. We're still having a conversation. And that's not a good thing.
Well,
but,
for them. For us.
Yeah, for them. For them. But I've actually got to run here for a minute. And if you want, I can come back and talk for a few minutes more
All right.
As we go offline.
Yeah, that sounds good. How about we go to just a few minutes?
You guys can find me at whiterabbitradio.net, and we're running all kinds of stuff there, like money bombs and stuff like that. But I'll be back in a few minutes. I got to run something right
all
now.
Right.
About 5 minutes.
Great.
Sure.
Well, I will go to a song then. Keep it on topic for tonight, even though the topic has switched in many different directions. That's what I enjoy about having Horace on. We talk about a wide variety of issues, keep it a little bit grounded at the beginning, and then just take it to some wild directions. This is Johnny White Rabbit here with a song.
These dancing whites, these dancing whites don't show me love, no, no. These dancing whites don't show me love. You keep saying white countries don't exist. You know what a white country is when you wanna flood it with Africans. You know what a white country is when you wanna flood it with Indians. You know what a white country is when you wanna flood it with Mexicans, Africans, Indians, Mexicans, Asians, Muslims, and millions of third worlds from Pakistan. It's the right time, right time, right time.
White countries for everyone, 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 white count
All right. Welcome back to the archives, the third hour of the Blitzkrieg broadcast. We're going to be wrapping this up shortly. Horace has to go, and I do as well. But I wanted to just do this properly, have a proper conclusion. And I don't know if Horace is back yet. Are you there? Guessing not. I will screen this caller then. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Well, here's Marcus again.
Marcus again, yes. I can hear you all right now. Anything you want to add?
All
or
right.
Are you just calling to listen?
Well, Horace went into this UFO thing, aliens, and so forth. And I've listening to some comrades in Germany who have a similar position. I mean, not the same, but they talk about, for example, about the Antarctic Treaty, that no country is allowed to colonize the South Pole continent. And but as we all know, Germany, of course, has colonized the continent in 1938 and 1937. And so the thing is, just reporting what they told me, and it's a good angle. I don't know if it's true. It's speculative. It's also what John DeNugent, for example, has talked about a little bit. But the thing is that the United Nations is at war with Germany. And the United Nations includes the Federal Republic of Germany, of course. So either they're just ghost fighting, you know, shadow boxing, some imaginary National Socialists out there, or there's something to it. Either way, the policies of the United Nations is certainly targeted at this ideology. And whenever a member state gets out of line, then they go in there and tell them, well, you gotta listen to what the UN Charter says.
Well, they do that with Israel, but Israel doesn't listen. So they have to pretend like they're against Israel, but it never amounts to anything. Horace, are you back yet? All right. Well, I'll bring this up. What's kind of interesting, tie in.
I just
with
got
the,
back. I'm back right now. Sorry.
All right. Well, great. We have Marcus who is back on the line. I was talking to him while you were off. He's talking about how the United Nations is enforcing treaties in Antarctica and their power. And I was bringing up that United Nations also has funded a group called Share International. And Share International is Benjamin Krem's organization. And for anybody that doesn't know about Benjamin Krem, he's somebody that talks all about the return of the Maitreya, who is Kalki, who is Jesus, who is, I think, maybe the 12th Imam or whoever they're going to say to fit the local stories all across the world. So the United Nations is seeking to at least to push forward a global religion involving a global Messiah. And funny enough, Benjamin Krem was the first guest I ever had on a radio show because his people got in touch with me after I did one premiere broadcast. So he was my second guest, and we were talking about this very same issue. He was more prominent, more well-known, decades ago when he was talking about the coming of the Messiah. The Maitreya in, I think, 1982 was when he was really putting out this big PR campaign.
He is heavily backed by certain interests out of London, that particular environmental meme and sharing. He's also virulently anti-white if you get him going. He's one of the interesting characters that of the New Age meme. He's one of the oldest, the interesting ones that they've come back to time and time again, because I don't think they have another playbook that Maitreya is going to come riding in a spaceship, and of late he said Jesus as well. So he's someone interesting to watch because he's funded by our enemies from a very high level. Now, with that being said, I just don't know what to make of him. The most interesting thing he talked about was these space brothers of ours that had bases in Russia and everything else. He said some interesting stuff about space brothers historically as well.
Oh, yeah.
And all these, he catches all those particular memes, but... You know, Benjamin Cream, the last place he was seen in a group of famous people was some of the biggest power players, including I think it was Bill Clinton, were on a cruise with him over out there outside the UK on some big cruise ship of some type.
That's ridiculous. I didn't know all of this.
Imagine, I didn't know this.
I was nobody on the radio. What I'm saying is it's ridiculous that this guy... I had no idea about all this stuff he was involved with. I thought he was just some kind of quack who had some kind of his history.
Religion can be pretty nutty. When you start talking about, let's say you were to develop a schema, how are you going to bring the big three religions to a close, and what are you going to roll it out with? Well, there's an obvious choice there. You've got a Maitreya, you've got a Jesus or whatever, and let's say you had technology that was kept behind the scenes, proprietary technology, and you're going to use this to try to pull over a hoax. Well, one day Benjamin Cream might sound like a nutball, but let's say you get a hologram you can see, feel, and touch that you can't tell if it's real, human, or not, and most people aren't even aware of such technology potentially, and let's say you get that going and descending on spaceships that aren't even real, just elaborate holograms. Next thing you know, Benjamin Cream's on the national TV or something. You know, I don't know.
Well,
I'm just cooking. I'm playing our enemy for a second.
People have seen this. People I know have seen things in the sky. These might be real. They might be holograms. People have seen massive ships over Crawford, Texas, where Bush has his estate down there. Over Russia.
Post-World War II, someone rang the dinner bell at World War II, and there has been massive number of sightings. I think, you know, typically if I watch the memes put out, there's always been some historic anomalies in the sky seen by all kinds of people all across the world. But post-World War II, it's gotten ridiculous.
But
I think it's not all a hoax. Someone's seeing something.
We're seeing some hoaxes, though, I think, like the big pyramids.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I believe they have a totally another generation of spacecraft or craft out there. I'm saying it's definitely military-industrial complexes, but they may not be accounting. Most of the arguments on alternative news and research would point to the fact that there's no way in hell that all these sightings can be military-industrial complex or hoaxes or holograms. That could be true because of the sheer number.
So it seems to be a combination of all these things that we're seeing.
Possibly.
I would tend towards that as well. Some people putting up holograms.
This is the fundamental question for Weiss. This is the fundamental question. Is the universe Jewish or is it Aryan? If it's Aryan, the universe is an open system. If it's Jewish, it's a closed system. You know? And there, you know, is there a beginning or an ending? Because in the Jewish faith, you know, there's a beginning, you wake up and you're dead and there's nothing there. There's a beginning and ending. It's a closed system. Seriously, that's all the Talmud is a closed system. That's
even
all
the Big Bang. Even the Big Bang that results
in the
Big Crunch.
Is it like in the National Socialist view, there's no beginning or end at all?
Well, there was ice theory that was put forth. I'm talking about in the Hindu terms.
They treated everything like a spiral, and that's what many elements of National Socialism. There was not a beginning or an ending, period.
Yeah, and that's
just one giant war.
That's why they push the Big Bang as something that is like almost scientifically proven now. That's absurd to say that we know exactly how the universe began. And that's the kind of monolithic
type of control that they have.
Well, hey, I'm hearing a lot of background noise again from Marcus. Marcus, anything else you want to add? And then we're going to wrap up. Muted him for a second.
Okay.
Marcus.
What can I say? Last time I said about the NPD, and I wanted to
change my opinion a little bit on that. You know, there are some problems, obviously, and the only party that is outlawed in Germany is the governing party. But so the NPD, they're doing some good work, especially in central Germany, you know, Saxony and northern state, Mecklenburg. And they always get shut down whenever they speak. they're not allowed to speak, so it's very funny to watch that, what's going on there. And what they say is not even that radical. You know, back in the 60s, the CDU, the Christian Union there, they said the same thing, basically. So you can see the shift there.
Yeah, there is decidedly a shift towards nationalism going on everywhere in the white world. Great things, I think, ahead for us. I think we will be able to get through the different traps they've set out there for us and different false fronts and whatnot. Hey, Marcus, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. See you, man.
All right.
What I generally tell listeners that are into that type of thing, because it can be very demoralizing thinking in terms of the enemy would actually plan on something like that and could get away with it. What I tell them is that once you pull the trigger on anything crazy that you might have read about, and I don't doubt it's out there. I know it is, that they've entertained all kinds of things. People in power generally do that. But once you pull the trigger on that, ain't no going back. There's no going back. There's no putting that genie back in the bottle if it falls on your face or if surprises show up or anything happens. Just don't worry about that. You know.
Well, I think the cat is out of the bag. Not just cats. Lions are out of the bag. So they're running in the opposite direction, I think. I think that they're retreating. They are retreating. They're, in some ways, yes, their message becomes more and more outrageous, more and more anti-white. But you see that that's just something of a front that they're keeping out there. Most of their people are starting to retreat right now in terms of having to backtrack on what they were pushing just a little while ago.
Yeah, I think they're pretty desperate, and that becomes dangerous. What are they willing to do? What I'm looking for right now is what happens with this new Chinese rover, because our enemy has partners all over the world. One of the interesting things about the asteroid meme, that we're going to fight asteroids, that now there's a meeting at the UN over that, and they're trumping up that particular thing, the war over asteroids, and we've got to shoot them down and everything else, is that, you know, you got the Chelyabinsk incident. Medvedev or one of those characters started talking about war against asteroids. Next thing you know, you have a Chelyabinsk incident over there in Russia, which I don't know what it was about or what hit there. There's all this speculation. But let's assume it was an asteroid. Now all of a sudden you're in a war against asteroid. We know what the next step is based on the Rosen affidavit. But I'm curious to see who rolls out the next meme and how they roll it out. Do the Chinese, do their partners in China say anything, and why this is global? You know, it's kind of like these questions I have. Why all these guys have to cooperate with something at the top of Western world? On some levels, we have the Russians absolutely a geopolitical, national, definitely on the border of Georgia and whatnot. We had them in total war. On the other level, they come back and negotiate with something, and now they're playing this war on asteroid game. So it's a very odd Cold War type scenario. On one ideal, we're at each other's throats. On the other ideal, there's something that they got to negotiate there. It's very odd.
Well, strange signs all over. Barack Obama, when he received that Nobel Peace Prize, wasn't that when the big spiral was seen in the sky over Norway?
Yeah, well, there's always been threats against, and these are well known by the pro-white side, of course, threats that, you know, Israel threatens a Holocaust against Europe and everything with nuclear weapons, and they certainly have them. The problem is, what happens if that technology is pretty much just there's a game going on? Let's talk about a hypothetical scenario, a typical white rabbit military scenario. Those weapons are all obsolete. They just haven't told us yet. Well, the first thing you're going to do is start sending signals that, okay, you've got a missile in the sky. We can just make it disappear with our technology. We can just send it in another dimension or just evaporate it. And so, you know, you have this spiral in the sky over Norway during that particular event. Someone's putting on a technological display. I'm totally convinced of it. Exactly who it was, I'm not sure, but I don't think it was the English-speaking world elite. I don't think it was the Western elite in any conventional source. It may have been the Russians. It may have been sending a message. But we haven't had any threats against Europe in a long time by certain elements out of Israel. At least those, you know, we'll just nuke all their cities and this and that, you know.
Right. The Samson option seems to be something of an older threat. They're not putting that one out there as much.
And I'm not by any means saying Israel doesn't have all kinds of nasty weapons that there's a whole other class of weapons that everyone speculates on, that's scalar weapons and that's scalar technology and lasers and that type of thing, that they're starting to roll out in front of our face to some extent. Sound-based weapons are a big deal. Sound can be very destructive, as my listeners know.
And robots?
There's a whole class of weapons based on sounds. Robots, artificial intelligence. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm guessing that behind the scenes are going to be 30 years ahead of us, and they've probably already solved some different equations. They're just waiting to roll it out on our heads. But of course, they're not the only ones in the game. They've got enemies of different factions, and yeah.
People likely have EMPs that could take out a lot of the different technological advancements that seem so dangerous right now. Once all circuitry's fried, it's not going to be working.
Yeah, yeah. What I would look for though is how they're moving into these memes, because if they're I'm totally convinced that it's kind of like one of those things like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. I don't know all about its history. And interesting enough, Dr. David Duke is writing a book all on its history, the actual history behind it, which is kind of interesting in itself. But it's one of those type of things where if you read it over, you're like, well, this came out years ago, and someone's following this script to some extent. So when you get into the Rosen affidavit, it's much more explicit that Von Braun told her that these were the moves of the Western world elites, you know. And certainly, now that we have the war on asteroids, which you can look it up, I mean, the Russians are talking about it, everyone's talking about it, it becomes a question of how they go to the next step. Because once you go in the next step, everyone on the planet's going to notice it. I don't know how many people are even aware of the war on asteroids and the Russians, Americans talking about space-based weapons and air defenses against asteroids at the UN and everything else. It's kind of corny. But yeah, at the same time, it's actual news. This is reality. And so the only one up is the next one. I'm interested to see how they roll it out, because that's the one that you're not going to be able to put back in the bottle if you roll it out. Will they actually go with it?
Well, you know what I find really interesting here about this war on aliens is that right now white people are in a war on aliens, or the aliens are in war on them in terms of illegal aliens coming to their countries. And there are a number of connections there as well, at least just in some of the words that are being used. I don't know if you know about this Mexican gang of illegal aliens that there were a few news stories that have been reported on about this group. They're called the Zetas. Now, yep. Obviously, anybody that's been looking into the space UFO aliens will know about the Zetas, which would be the Greys. So they have illegal aliens at one level.
But the Greys show up in mythology, and let me tell you something about the Greys. There are no Grey aliens in mythology, but they're there. They're there. They're there in South America, but they're not. Their deaths, the things about them that I could get you sources on, the weirdest things about them is, in my opinion, they're not aliens at all. And they're not a biological life form. They're synthetic bioentities to some extent. If they're real, what I'm saying is that they're some type of artificial intelligence.
Sounds kind of crazy.
When you go down this road, you always end up in one spot, that there was a very high paleo-ancient civilization that ran into this solar system, that had settlements across the solar system, that had some very advanced technology. And they went to war in this solar system. For various different reasons. The last one would have been an internal conflict to some extent. And they had some very sophisticated technology that stayed around, and like robots and automatons and various different things like that, you know, the devil and his helpers and God and his angels and that type of thing.
Well, Vulcan had an army of golden robot women. This is the Greek god, or actually in Greece, he was known as Hephaestus, and Vulcan to the Romans. You know, he had his forge relating to the volcano and everything like that.
Right.
But
in Norse mythology, you have their weapons created by these little craftsmen of some type. And you know, this speculation over them being artificial intelligence is probably the most, if they're real, that would be the most accurate, because they don't, you know, look at the descriptions of them. They're certainly not, they don't procreate or anything like that. But that would just be my speculation. That there are no gray aliens. That's all BS. That they are artificial intelligence of some type, and left over from this paleo-ancient civilization, if real. And you never, I don't think, that's one question. Will the elites ever tell us if this civilization was real? No, they wouldn't want whites to know at all. They would only tell us if they had to tell us. That is something, because guess what? Elements would still be here. Can you imagine if one morning you woke up and found out that some of these guys in charge aren't really who they say they are or what they say they are? They're not green lizards at all. It's just, you know, humans from a previous civilization that are very ancient. They can live a long time due to technology of some sort or something along those crazy lines. What would the reaction be? You know, no, they're not going to say that at all, I don't think. But who knows?
Well, interesting things to consider. Horace, always an adventure talking to you on these radio shows. I appreciate you staying up with me here tonight and going into the archives. And again, it's always just fascinating, thoughtful material that you present. So thank you for doing it. And people can check you out over at whiterabbitradio.net. And you said you have a money bomb going on, correct?
Yes, we have an animation money bomb. We're gearing up for our next adventure. We start, we raise enough money, we start concept art on it this week. This week, it's called Johnny Racist. It's a little more hard-hitting than what you guys have seen before, if you can believe that. It's about a dystopic university.
All right. Well, I look forward to that, and I encourage people to go check out whiterabbitradio.net. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully, we'll be able to get on the radio again. It looks like it'll be in 2014, so if you're up for it, we'll get in touch. Keep in touch. And really do. I appreciate you coming by at Renegade Broadcasting tonight.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on. And everyone, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that good stuff.
To you as well. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And thank you out there for listening. As always, check out all the other great hosts here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com.
I used to believe that anti-racists were what they claimed to be, that they were good people standing up for justice and equality, that they were simply against racism and that they were doing what they thought was right. But there are some things I just can't comprehend. If skin colour doesn't matter, then why do they complain if something is too white and demand it accept more diversity? If they really were colourblind, then why do they have affirmative action for non-whites and racial quotas? If diversity is something people really want, then why do they have to force integration and assimilation? If multiculturalism is something people really want, then why do we have white flight? Why is it that they talk about white privilege in white countries, but not Asian privilege in Asian countries? If race is a social construct, then why is racial diversity so important? They say you shouldn't judge people based on the colour of their skin. So why then, at the same time, do they blame white people for all the evil things in the world? It's official that white people are becoming the minority in their own countries. If this trend continues, it will lead to a world without any white people. If we had a policy that led to a world without Jews, it would be considered as genocide. So why is it then, when this is happening to my race, it is not considered as genocide? If the goal is not to get rid of white people, why is it that they first want racial diversity in all and only white countries and then want us to mix together in a melting pot? They say that Africans have the right to Africa and that white people shouldn't be there, but at the same time they say white countries are for everyone. This seems to be the anti-white mentality. Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, but white countries are for everyone. They are not denying white genocide. They are justifying it. That is the reason that anti-racist is a code word for anti-white.
White Man March, March 15th, 2014. Beware the Ides of March. Goodbye.
The darkness of centuries was under siege. The light, he took back control. The unit systems of a jungler, a man stood up, he heard the call. He was the fall of the eternal beast. A fool wouldn't take it anymore. He marched on for freedom, the soldiers of light, fire burning in their eyes. They were fighting with courage and honor. The spirit will never die. The spirit will never die. Many years went by. The land flourished like never before. But from the Jolies where the evil to wipe came a threat of a new war.
The spirit will never die. The spirit will never die.